If you're interested in following along with the police procedural mentioned in today's episode of Rob and Akiva Need a Podcast, you could do so at robhasawebsite.com/CSI New York. It is definitely not mandatory or necessary for your hopeful enjoyment of this podcast.
All right. Season 3, Episode 7 is huge on the wheel right now. Almost half the wheel is Season 3, Episode 7.
Is it coming up?
Oh, it's so close, but it is not. It is one spot away.
Wow.
And it's Rob and Akiva Solve a Murder.
Okay. We're watching a TV show and no guest.
Okay. So this is one of the very first things that got put on the wheel. No veto, right?
No, I'm not vetoing.
Okay. We're watching Season 3, Episode 7 of CSI New York, if I recall. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Oh, so it is a Season 3, Episode 7.
It is, but it was one that...
Do listen to the show, Chester. We've gone over this 28 times
but
now.
What we're going to do is it's going to be a little tricky in terms of timing, but we're going to watch the show, and then we will come back after each act break and describe the action, and then give our predictions about what's going on after each. So it'll be basically like six segments.
Yeah. And maybe I'll have a listener sort of send us like the timestamps before, and so we know how long we have.
Okay. All right. There you go. All right. Rob and Akiva Solve a Murder.
Rob and Akiva need a podcast, and they need your help. Can you make it onto the wheel? Rob and Akiva need a podcast. Yeah, they'll buy themselves your ideas. They'll talk about it till you've got it. You'll feel every weekend better.
Solve a Murder. New York City. The Big Apple. Frank Sinatra said, if you can make it there, you can make it anywhere. It's a concrete jungle where dreams are made of. But beneath the tall towers and bright lights lies a world that many know nothing about. It's a world where illicit underground raves take place on board otherwise normal subway train lines. Violinists perform and glow sticks dance akimbo underneath the city streets. This is the story of one woman, and for the sake of her story, we'll call her now Jane Doe. She boarded that illicit subway rave, and she was there for a good time. But she had the most unpleasant experience, even by the standards of New York City mass transit. Hi, I'm Rob Cesternino, and along with my co-host, Akiva Winokur, we're going to be solving the mystery of the murder of this woman here on Rob and Akiva Solve a Murder. Akiva, hello, how are you?
I'm great today, Rob. What's going on?
I am doing okay. We have uncovered a lot of evidence. We've been reviewing the case of Jane Doe, who boarded that New York City subway line. And we have a lot to discuss with you over this either 5 or 6 part series discussing the murder of this woman.
Yeah, I do think by the end of this, we will. This is not like serial. We will get to the end of it and actually, this, you know, figure out who did it.
It is a big mystery, and we are going to get to the bottom of this, and we will also meet the people that were the crime scene investigators investigating this New York City murder from some years ago.
Do you know when the murder took place?
I do not know. Do you know when the murder took place?
No, but I feel like that's part of our quest is to figure out when the murder took place.
When the murder took place, who the woman is, and who did it. That is the aim of this podcast series that we will try to uncover in the next 5 to 6 episodes. Akiva, I guess we should begin discussing the man who is at the center of the crime scene investigators who were brought in to look at the murder of this young woman. And the man who is the chief investigator is a man who goes by the name of Mac Taylor. Mac is a detective first grade and director of the New York Police Department Crime Lab in the first decade of the 2000s.
Mac famously was serving in the Marine Corps during the 83 Beirut bombings, And he's a veteran of Operation Desert Storm.
Yeah. Sadly, Mac had a personal tragedy. His wife was killed in the attacks on the World Trade Center. But that does not stop him from currently dating occasionally.
Yes. And we will certainly investigate the name of who he's dating right now.
Okay. All right. So on the night in question of this murder, it happened to be the birthday of Mac Taylor, and his date took him out to go see a Japanese opera, Akiva.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yes. And I will say his date is a very attractive woman. There is no woman attractive enough to be worth it for it to go to the opera on your birthday.
But just as Mac and his date were watching the opera's climactic seppuku, sometimes referred to as harikari, the ritualistic Japanese suicide in the opera, that he was called away from his birthday festivities to go investigate the murder, which took place on board a subway train. Now, Akiva, it appears that on the New York City subway lines, late at night, there are wild raves that happen. A whole unseemly environment going on down there of people who have raves on moving subway train cars in New York City. Did you know about this when you lived in New York City?
I was never invited to any of them. I do know, we don't know what subway line this is. But we do know that this was probably, it could be said, the most lit and least lit subway car of all time. Least lit in the sense that it appears to be completely dark. I do not know how they shut the lights off.
Mm-hmm.
But most lit in the sense that there are like actual violin players and not like the types that come, you know, on a New York City subway and ask for money. They seem to be really playing with the music that other people are playing.
Yep.
It seems very crowded, sweaty. I would guess it's at least like 107 degrees Fahrenheit in the subway car, right?
It was all part of the party, and Jane Doe was having the time of her life. She was drinking something which appeared to be whiskey from some sort of a very fancy decanter, which is being passed out. This was a high-class party aboard the New York City subway line.
Only the best for the E-train.
And the party was jumping, but it looks as though there was something extra in this drink that Jane Doe did not order.
We think. We're not sure if it was the drink or was she poisoned. She may have fallen on glass. It's not totally clear yet.
Yes. And so Jane Doe was left a bloodied, deceased mess on the New York City subway, and all traces of the party were then gone by the time crime scene investigators arrived.
Which seems suspicious. It's almost like, were the people who threw the party covering up a murder just because they didn't want the party to be sort of found out about, or were they involved in the murder? I do think we have to put them on our suspect list.
Yeah, it's unclear whether at one of these illicit raves that once somebody dies that they say, oh, quick, clean up, everybody. Hide all the evidence. Let's get out of here. Quick, transfer to the F-train.
Yeah, it's good practice for the underground raves. And there are probably are there cameras on New York City subway cars?
It does not appear at this time that there were subway.
And oh, the horrible things those cameras have seen, if they are.
Yes.
Imagine the person whose job it is to have to watch those cameras.
Yes. So crime scene investigators arrived at the scene and debriefed Mac Taylor upon his arrival. So there is some thought perhaps this could be a biological agent. Now, for some reason, the CDC, hazmat, nobody seems to be that concerned about some sort of chemical attack here.
I would think this would shut down the entire subway system
so, but they apparently made a phone call to the CDC. They said, no, it looks okay.
I would probably double check.
I would double check because you would think that they would wear at least a gas mask, but or some sort of like a surgical mask at the very least. But no, there was no cause for concern, even though Jane Doe was bleeding from every mucous membrane on her body.
Yeah. Do you know how many mucous membranes a person have? Because I didn't know there were mucous membranes till about 10 minutes ago.
I think like five.
Okay, that's probably a good guess. It's either five or like thousands. Could be thousands.
Yes. So police were alerted to this gruesome murder, which took place on the subway line, by a caller to 911. And we have a recording of what the police received at the 911 call reporting this murder.
She wore blue velvet.
Okay, an interesting piece of evidence here, Akivo. What do you feel like that this could mean? Do you think that maybe the perpetrator for the attack was the person that called in the Bobby Vinton song Blue Velvet to the 911 dispatch?
Could be. Was the deceased wearing blue velvet? Was that her dress? I do not know.
That Jane Doe was wearing blue, but it is still unknown what type of material she was wearing in terms of we're going to have to wait for the to see the report from the autopsy in a later part of Rob McKeith of Solve a Murder.
Okay, I'm looking forward to that.
Okay. They also found at the scene of the crime a couple of other things. A glow stick was found near the body of Jane Doe.
I mean, there were many glow sticks on the train, so that could mean something or nothing, right?
Yes. It seems like that there was one glow stick that the people who did this amazing cleanup on the subway forgot. Do you think that that was intentional?
I mean, they were probably rushing. I think, you know, it seems like this could have been a premeditated act, especially because of, you know, the evidence we have, like the automated, phone message, which seems to be planned, but I don't know. I don't know. They definitely could have been sloppy and made some mistakes.
There was also a fingerprint found on the pole in this subway car. Do you think that this is a fingerprint that will help solve this murder? Or do you think that this is a fingerprint of one of the millions of people who have recently ridden the subway car?
It does seem a little suspicious that there would be a fingerprint on a subway pole of a subway that probably rides, yes, hundreds of thousands of people a day. But, Mac Taylor seems to think that this could be a big clue in the case.
If anyone is going to be able to solve the murder of Jane Doe, it would be Mac Taylor, a man who will stop at nothing to solve New York City's many murders. At the scene of the crime, he had some thoughts about what may have transpired.
I did find this glow stick near the body. Could be a souvenir from a
party or a club.
This girl didn't come from the party. The party was here on the train. And murder was the last stop.
Make sure you get off before murder. If you've hit murder, you've gone too far.
This detective reminds me of another detective I used to know in Miami who would say, you know, very sort of like dramatic things, and then sort of he would walk away. That would be it.
Akiva, we on this mini part series will learn more about what happened with Jane Doe and the people investigating her murder. And hopefully by the end of this podcast series, the murderer of Jane Doe will be brought to justice here as Robin Akiva Solve a Murder continues. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to episode number 2 of Robin Akiva Solve a Murder. I'm Rob Sesternino, here with my co-host, Akiva Winokur. Akiva, I want to talk to you about the curious case of Grant Jordan.
Yeah, we really started this podcast thinking we'd get to the bottom of a murder, but I think we almost have to call this now Robin Akiva Solve Two Murders.
It was a murderous spree in New York City. And the case of Grant Jordan only complicates the mystery. Akiva, Grant Jordan was a man who some thought had it all, considered to be New York City's most prolific and eligible bachelor. He was a triple threat. He was a triathlete. He was a philanthropist. And he was a ladies' man, Akiva.
And he, like many ladies' men, had a picture of himself on the cover of a magazine hanging from his apartment.
And Grant Jordan lived in a $2 million Manhattan high-rise apartment with a gorgeous view, which was to die for.
Dun dun.
Grant Jordan was found dead in an infinity pool, which was part of his apartment. As an incredible athlete, he had like a pool treadmill in his bedroom where he could swim miles and miles without leaving his room, Akiva, similar to the one that you have set up in your office.
Yeah, I mean, who amongst us in Manhattan does not have a pool treadmill in their bedroom?
Now, Grant Jordan, though, for being a wealthy playboy, also had some interesting things about him. Grant Jordan had an arrangement with many women where they would become something of a roommate slash maid.
Yeah, they would call them roommates.
Roommates. Now, Akiva, what would be the benefit of having a roommate as opposed to, as a millionaire playboy, just hiring a maid to come in and clean your apartment? Why go to the trouble of then having a maid who lives with you for free in exchange for cleaning and vacuuming the house?
It seems very impractical to have someone live with you when you could very easily, right, as you say, get the same services but not have them actually live in your house.
And Grant Jordan had some interesting things about this requirements for this position. He only wanted women who were blonde with blue eyes to be his roommates slash maid. But in exchange for being his maid, they also got access to the infinity pool.
Grant, it should be said, was not just a regular ladies' man. It was said that he had a different woman in his apartment every single night, and his neighbors were not pleased about it.
His neighbors hated him as much as the women of Manhattan loved him. They said he would not invite them to any parties, and one pervert down the hall took a quick break from eating a giant chocolate bar to say he had sex every night, and she would often listen.
Is it, I would ask you, suspicious that frequently when people are discussing murders with New York City detectives, I'd say, ear witnesses or eyewitnesses always seem to be so nonplussed by the fact that a murder has taken place maybe 5 minutes, five seconds from their door. And this is probably the most interesting thing that happened to them that year. But they seem extremely disinterested with speaking to the police detective.
Yes, that it's almost as if they seem somewhat amused that Grant Jordan is dead.
I mean, we really have to put together a suspect list or two different suspect lists for Jane Doe and for Grant Jordan. And I would say everyone who lives on Grant Jordan's floor, who was not invited to his epic parties that broke the noise sound barrier, I think they all have to be on the suspect list.
The thing about Grant Jordan's apartment, paper thin walls, where not only can you hear all the parties and all the sex and all of the endless pools running, you can hear almost anything that happens. So we'll see just if anything interesting was overheard. Now, Grant Jordan was found by his latest roommate, who she claimed that she was on the first day on the job, as she used the internal vacuum, the HVAC set up in this Manhattan skyrise, and she vacuumed all the floor as she slipped into lingerie. I'm not sure if that was part of a Grant Jordan's mandatory house cleaning rules. And then as she was vacuuming away, she opened the endless pool to discover Grant Jordan's body. Do you think that she could be a suspect?
She's definitely on the need to speak to again list. I think if it really was not her first day on the job, we could figure that out pretty quickly. That's going to be pretty simple to figure out. We should also maybe discuss a little bit, because since Mac Taylor is busy dealing with Jane Doe, perhaps discuss the fine detectives who are working on this case.
Yes. Who are the people who are investigating the murder of Grant Jordan?
Well, we have the great Danny Messer, who is a third grade detective, and he's a CSI investigator. I, that's probably redundant, but he's a crime scene investigator. Mm-hmm. And Danny is driven by ethics, and he hopes to one day run the New York crime lab. You should dream big.
Yeah.
And he seems like he's on track for a promotion.
All right. Start with just solving this case. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I think this could be the big break that, that Danny Messer has been waiting for.
Okay. All right. Who else is there?
Well, we have Stella Bonacera.
Yes.
Who you know, is one of the greats of the New York Police Department. But she often speaks before she thinks, leading to many complaints about her from people being suspected of crimes.
Mm. The body of Grant Jordan was taken back to the lab for an autopsy, and something very unusual was found inside of the lungs of Grant Jordan. It was the top to some sort of wedding cake where a ceramic bride's head was found inside the lungs of Grant Jordan. What could that possibly mean, Akiva?
Well, it seemed that Stella seemed to think that that meant that there was a bride in his apartment, which right. to me seems maybe off base. I think
a little on the nose,
a little on the nose. But I also think you could say is just straight wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I think that perhaps one of his many jilted lovers was thinking that they would be
Mrs. Jordan,
and that they perhaps that's who we should be looking at. The problem is, if you or I had committed the murder, we would have very few suspects.
Very few suspects.
But with Mr. Jordan here, there are literally hundreds. So I they're really going to have to canvas, you know, basically the entire lower side of Manhattan.
So many women in and out of the bedroom of Grant Jordan. The autopsy also revealed some fingerprints on the forehead of Grant Jordan, which seemed to indicate that perhaps his head was held under the water. Now, as a triathlete, an expert swimmer who goes in the endless pool every single night, Akiva, it would seem as though someone with a great deal of strength would need to be the person holding Grant Jordan's head under the water.
Would you say that this means that perhaps there was a second accomplice? Was there? Could there have needed to be a male in the room also?
It could be a very strong woman.
Yes, yeah, certainly. Or it could be two people holding him down, possibly.
Very possible. Another clue which was found at the crime scene was another blue contact lens. Now, the newest roommate of Grant Jordan, she was also, Grant Jordan, I guess, doesn't care if you wear a blonde wig or use blue contacts. It seems like that maybe a lot of these maids showed up with blue contacts on, and there was a blue contact lens found in the filter of Mr. Grant Jordan's pool.
Yeah, so this could be a second fake blonde-haired, blue-eyed roommate.
Okay. And more to come in the case of Grant Jordan. Do you feel like that there is a connection between these two murders, or is it possible that there is an A murder and a B murder in this podcast?
I really do not know yet. Can I ask a question?
Yes.
Is our blue-dressed Jane Doe, did she have blonde hair and blue eyes?
She had brown hair and a blue dress. Oh. But blue does seem to be the one. The color blue seems to connect these two things.
Yes. I am leaning towards connected, but I don't know what that could be yet.
Back to the case of Jane Doe. We have some new evidence to report on the podcast this week that our crime scene investigators, Mac Taylor, ended up getting some other leads on what was going on. We have some confirmation, no biological attack on the subway car.
The entire city of New York, which was unaware of this, can now breathe easily knowing that there are not chemical weapons on the subway. And I think an important update from in the corrections department from episode one till now is we thought this was could have been the E train. This was, in fact, the F train.
The F train. Okay. F for forensics.
Yes.
At the autopsy of Jane Doe, some interesting discoveries were made. First and foremost, an origami paper crane was found on the body of Jane Doe. Now, Akiva, in Japanese culture, 1,000 paper cranes in origami normally brings good luck.
Yes, a fact so famous that any sort of person, you know, doing an autopsy would know that off the top of their head.
That's right. In addition, the autopsy revealed some findings in terms of the cause of death, where it looks as though there have been chemical burns in the throat of Jane Doe along the esophageal lining, crystalline traces around her body. It seems as though she drank something which may have killed her.
But did she drink it on purpose, or was, you know, or was it sort of forced down her throat? We don't know.
You think that perhaps the murder of, or maybe no murder at all, you feel like that as perhaps maybe intercut with the Japanese opera, the Harikari ritualistic suicide, you think perhaps maybe Jane Doe boarded this train, perhaps even leaving the apartment of Grant Jordan, that she came to the train to commit a horrific ritualistic suicide.
That is certainly possible. I had not thought of that, but that's really something to keep track of for episode three.
A lot to discuss here as Mac Taylor and the crime scene investigators went and met up with the man who was putting together the nightly illicit train raves. Akiva, what do we know about this man?
We know that he sells flyers for $100 on the street if you want to know when the rave is. I feel like, you know, one of the problems with that, as opposed to selling tickets, is you really just need to sell one and then they could just post it on the internet and everyone would know. But this guy maybe doesn't know about the internet yet. We don't know exactly what year this murder took place in. We're still trying to figure that out. This guy seems the exact level of shadiness for someone who's giving something away on a New York City street.
If I had to guess, I believe this murder took place sometime in the fall of 2006.
Okay, that checks out.
So it seems like for $100, you get the flyer, so then you know which subway car to show up for your BYOB party on the subway.
No, is it BYOB? I don't know about that.
Yeah, that's BYOB.
They said that? Okay. Well, that seems like a ripoff.
It's a ripoff. Now, do you get your subway fare covered for the $100?
I really don't think so. I don't know how logistically they would work that out. It just seems impossible. Now, unless the subway's in on these parties and they're sort of letting everyone through some sort of gate door, like side gate.
Maybe somebody on the MTA could potentially also be in on this inside job.
It also seems like you could just, if you know it's on the F train, you could, you know, and you don't, but you don't know when.
You
and
don't know which
it's
train,
coming.
You don't know which night, you don't know which stop it's on.
I was thinking if you knew it was the F, you could sort of just wait in the subway station until you see kind of a rave come by your station and then you could just join. Also, what about the poor people who are just trying to get home from like a quiet night at the bar and they have run into this rave train? That sounds like a disaster to me.
Yeah, it's really more of a flash mob than a party.
Yeah, I do think like anybody who's prone to seizures probably should not go on this subway train.
Could you imagine you're just riding home from work and then a rave breaks out on the subway car around you?
Ooh, sounds like a nightmare.
So the man who organized this party, he was also the person who called 911. Akiva, is this the same man who played the Blue Velvet recording to the police?
It seems to be the implication, but we can't know for sure. But he's not denying that when the police ask him.
Is he one of our main suspects?
Only because we have so few. We almost have nothing to go on. He either is or knows the main suspect. I don't think we usually I feel like the suspect would be better hidden than this. I don't know if we've met the murderer or the murderers yet. That's my guess.
Yes. This man seems to have no motive to why he would want Jane Doe dead.
It seems like it would be particularly helpful for future parties.
For business.
If people start whispering about murders happening on the subway train.
Okay. Akiva, is there anything else you want to talk about in the case of Jane Doe or in the case of Grant Jordan for this week?
No, other than, you know, I've never seen a British woman New York City detective before, but I guess there's a first time for everything.
A first time for everything. On the next episode of Rob and Akiva Solve a Murder Spree, we will have more evidence about the cases of Grant Jordan and Jane Doe, and perhaps some connections which may link the murders together next time on Rob Nakiva Solve a Murder Spree. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Rob and Akiva Solve a Murder Spree, episode number 3. I am Rob Cesternino, back with my co-host, Akiva Winokur. And Akiva, I believe we have some shocking new revelations about the murder of Jane Doe to talk about with our listeners this week.
Yeah, well, for starters, I don't think we need to call her Jane Doe anymore, right?
Yes, that our Jane Doe has been identified by our crime scene investigation team, and her name is Jenny Anders.
Yes, and it does seem, in a shocking twist, that one of the detectives, Dr. Sheldon, and we call him Dr. Sheldon because he used to be a doctor, but he got really sad after a couple of his patients died, and he became a crime scene investigator.
Mm-hmm.
Knew Jenny Anders for a minute. We don't know what that means, and I'm not sure we ever will.
This may have been a flashback to a previous episode of this series. Is that possible?
We don't know.
Is Dr. Sheldon a suspect at this point?
I would say no. That would be shocking. I mean, Dr. Sheldon famously graduated college at 18. Was a board licensed surgeon by the age of 24.
AKA Ox.
Yes, AKA Ox. I do think it would be beyond stunning for him to be the murderer. I would say he's not on our suspect list at all.
Okay. Let's talk about some persons of interest in this case. So our autopsy reveals some substances that were involved on the body of Miss Anders. And what it appears to be is a combination of the chemical compound MDMA and a male potency drug. Akiva, I know that this is your area of expertise.
Sure. Male impotency? What are you trying to say?
The crime scene investigators refer to this combination as sextacy.
Sure. Ooh, yeah. Famous drug, sextacy.
And also, in addition, some DNA is found. And I'm not sure exactly how the DNA is not really mentioned. But we are able to ID a person of interest. And that is none other than the wealthy industrial magnate, Mr. James McQuinn.
Yes. James McQuinn appears to have his own airline and also be involved in the underground New York City subway party scene.
He's a bit of a Richard Branson type where he is involved in many different industries.
I would say like the poor man's Richard Branson, maybe the homeless man's Richard Branson.
James McQuinn is a name that was very familiar to Mr. Mac Taylor, because Mac Taylor investigated a previous case, a felony conviction that James McQuinn worked on, but would you ever believe of who the alibi was when James McQuinn was up for that felony conviction? None other than the man who runs the illicit subway rave, Randy Kern.
Yes, and we may need to go back and investigate that crime from 6 years ago. Our records for Mac Taylor only go back about 3.7 years, but I think we could end up investigating 5 different crimes by the end of this podcast series.
Yes, it is a whole crime ring that we have uncovered. So on the night in question, Jenny Anders was somewhere potentially with James McQuinn, even though we will check in with him later on. And apparently Mr. McQuinn was snorting sextacy off Miss Anders' leg. And then sometime after, she boarded the blue train and then was poisoned.
A slight correction to episode two also. When I said that they could just have one copy of the flyer and everyone could go, I think you need a copy of the flyer to get into the party. I don't know how they enforce that on the subway system. Our lovely detective seemed to have gotten past that.
Yes.
But that appears to be the case, right? You need the flyer to get into the party, which is why we now learn it goes for as much as $500 on eBay.
Yes. And while I do not believe refreshments are provided on the party, that the acronym BYOB, I believe, does stand for bring your own blue. You need to be wearing blue,
yes,
to
blue
attend
party.
The illicit rave. I do think you still need to bring your own alcohol. I do not think that any refreshments are provided.
Yes, and people have made their tongues blue. Everything on them is blue.
Everything is blue. Okay. Meanwhile, that we are still investigating the case of Grant Jordan. This week, we uncovered some more evidence as the HVAC system for Mr. Jordan's apartment. The investigators have been going through that and found some interesting pieces of evidence, Akiva.
What they find in the HVAC system?
Used condoms,
mm-hmm,
and more pieces of the statue.
Yes, more of the part of the cake topper for a hypothetical wedding cake.
We also were going to be following up leads with the previous maids of Grant, mm-hmm, Jordan, the women who were his former roommates. And so we are going to go and speak with Victoria Perez, another person of interest here in this case. She is the most recently dispatched roommate of Mr. Grant Jordan.
Yes. And when we found Ms. Perez, she was being a roommate for another client.
Yes.
When the police opened the door to see her, she was extremely unconcerned that she was in her underwear cleaning someone's apartment with the police there.
Yes.
Kept cleaning.
And while we are crime scene investigators investigating murder, that I think it is seems unusual that so many of the suspects and persons of interest in these proceedings are in various states of undress.
Yeah, undress and pretty, you know, if a policeman showed up in my office and I was in my underwear, I'd at least be like slightly sort of flummoxed, but these people seem like it happens to them almost every day.
No, it seems like that the crime scene investigators just seem to stumble upon
pop-ins.
A number of women who are in, yes, different states of being in lingerie and bras and underwear.
Yes, and Ms. Perez also points out the second she finds out that this person who was ostensibly a good friend of hers died by via her his, you know, in-room pool/treadmill. She points out that he was such a good swimmer, which just seems like a very normal thing to say.
Right.
The second you find that somebody died in their treadmill. Like, how did he drown? He was a great swimmer.
And she had also recently been in the pool with him. It seems as though Grant Jordan liked to have pool parties with his roommates. That is, he seemed like he liked to have co-ed swimming.
Yes. You know, she also, we can really knock her out as a suspect, Rob. I don't know if you agree, because she clearly states that she had sex with him, but did not kill him. And you know, if anybody tells a New York City police detective that they did not commit the murder, they did not commit it. We have to take them at their word. That seems to be canon. Mm-hmm. She is not on her suspect list.
Yes. Why did Grant Jordan fire Ms. Perez? Because she claimed that Grant Jordan was never happy with her work. Was it her work as a maid?
Could be both. I mean, we know that, there was a lot of noise coming from his room. I mean, it's possible that...
Was she a bad swimmer?
It's possible that she was a bad swimmer. She might have just been bad at cleaning. I mean, we saw the new, you know, cleaning woman who found Grant.
Yes.
Seems to be a very, very good cleaner. She was being very thorough.
Good dancer.
Mm-hmm. Good dancer, yeah.
Now, Ms. Perez, that we've heard that Mr. Jordan has a proclivity for blondes with blue eyes. And Ms. Perez is a brunette with brown eyes, yet she does wear contact lenses.
So I guess blue contacts, and she probably had to wear a blonde wig for work.
Yes. And she did turn over a contact lens to the New York Police Department. Meanwhile, let's get back to the case of Miss Anders. And as you mentioned, that Sheldon Hawks, he did know her. He seemed like that he had gotten her phone number, but that is not where the coincidences end here, because one of the other crime scene investigators working the case recognizes this origami paper crane as something that a man on the subway makes a quote unquote trash artist that he yes. turns paper trash into origami paper cranes and could be the subject of an upcoming podcast called Your Art is Trash.
Yes. We've also been called trash artists at various points of this podcast.
Yes. Now, is the origami paper crane the same piece of paper that Ox gave to this woman, Jenny Anders, with his phone number?
Oh, do we know for sure that that is Ox who wrote the thing, or that he knows her from a previous time? That wasn't clear to
me. I'm not sure. She got a phone number. I think it was him. Why flash back to that moment where she's getting a phone number from somebody who looks like Ox?
Yeah, no, I guess you're right. The flashback really locks it in. You're probably right.
Mm-hmm.
And this trash artist probably remembers who he makes all his trash art for.
Mm-hmm. And so we will see. Well, what is the name of this crime scene investigator that recognizes the trash art from the subway?
The man or the woman?
The woman.
Her name is
Stella.
I think, isn't she Lindsay?
Okay, we don't know.
We're not sure. I think she's Lindsay.
We think so. And
Stella's the one with the wild hair. Lindsay is the one who is into Danny, but I don't think Lindsay and Danny are working on the same case in this episode, but I'm not sure.
All right. So she and Ox are going to go and try to find the trash artist on the subway.
Mm-hmm.
Where's the trash artist today? Can't find him.
I feel like what would be the best train for the trash artist? Not sure.
What goes to Yankee Stadium?
Oh, that's a good point. The six, maybe? C? I don't know.
Okay. Akiva, meanwhile, that they can't find the trash artist, but they have somehow, maybe by way of paying $500, figured out which train is the blue train tonight.
Well, you think they had to buy a ticket for the blue train, and that's how they got on there. That's probably a good point. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. They figured out how to get on the blue train, and they got there. Nobody's there, but then all of a sudden, we see the people, the BYOB party breaks out on the train. Boom.
Yeah, I'd say within a span of 2 seconds, the train is empty. 2 seconds later, it is absolutely lit.
It is lit. It is a rap video. People are twerking on the subway poles, and it is a scene unlike any that you could imagine on the New York City Transit.
Mm-hmm.
And we see on board this train is a person of interest. The trash artist is on board the blue train.
Mm-hmm. And they very cleverly show him their badge, which is blue.
Which is blue. We have one other segment to discuss here on Robin Akiva Solve a Crime Spree, a Murder Spree here. We want to talk about Mr. Mac Taylor, who was able to track down Mr. James McQuinn, the industrial magnate who is having a big party at LaGuardia Airport, as people do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. I've been to many.
Big LaGuardia Airport party with sexy flight attendants carrying drinks around like it's a Mad Men episode for Alex
the
Chester.
The future of parties is on board plane. This is not 1964.
Right. So James McQuinn, he knows a good time. He feels like people will, instead of, hey, that Randy is making a killing, no pun intended, having parties on the subway, I'm going to have parties on airplanes. And so he is sort of out there trying to get the ball rolling on sexy airplane parties. But here comes Mr. Mac Taylor, who is no stranger to Mr. James McQuinn.
Yeah, oh, that's Detective Mac Taylor to you.
Detective Mac Taylor. And so he wants to know, what do you know about Jenny Anders? She's a woman and she died and she was on the blue train. And what do you know about her?
Yeah. Well, what does he know about her? I think, does he admit to a previous relationship with Jenny? I think he does, right?
He says that he doesn't know her. He doesn't forget a face.
Oh, yeah. He doesn't forget a face. What about a leg?
What about a leg? Mac Taylor Touché. Retorts. And Mac Taylor says, well, your DNA was all over this woman mm-hmm. and your MDMA and your male potency drug was all over this woman. He says, hey, why don't you talk to Randy Kearns about this? It seems like it's all a coincidence to me.
And Mac Taylor points out the first rule of detectiveness, which is there are no coincidences in murders.
That is a good point.
Mm-hmm.
Now, James McQuinn, for a, you know, CEO, rich guy type, he has a injury to his hand. Yeah. His hand is all bandaged up. What happened to Mr. McQuinn?
He said he was deep sea diving, which I will say is an atrocious excuse when we have a murder committed underwater, and he's basically admitting to a underwater injury. I would say James McQuinn, if he's guilty, is very dumb.
James McQuinn attempts a flex on Mr. Mac Taylor. He says, by the way, also, do you know I'm good friends with the mayor?
Mm-hmm. Is that a threat?
Yeah. Just a reminder. Just a reminder. Just an mm-hmm. interesting tidbit Mr. McQuinn tells
Mac
Taylor.
Now, this is 2006. Is this mayor, I guess this is Michael Bloomberg.
Bloomberg. He's good friends with Bloomberg.
I mean, Bloomberg is friends with all the subway train promoters, as most people with $50
well, this
billion.
This is the industrial magnate.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that Bloomberg might have to put in a phone call and get Mac Taylor to go investigate someplace else. Mac Taylor has a warning of his own for James McQuinn.
Don't fly that thing too low. I want to keep you on my radar.
Yeah. If you better not fly that thing too low, because you are on my radar now, sir. Akiva. Do you feel like we have enough information to piece this murder mystery spree together yet?
I think between episode 2 and 3, we've really gained a lot of perspective. I think James McQuinn is probably our lead suspect in one or possibly both of the murders. We can rule out Veronica Perez, the previous, you know, we knew we had to look into the previous.
Was
roommate.
Grant Jordan potentially looking to launch his own sexy airplane party business?
Very possible. There could have been dueling. You know, this could have been like, Armageddon versus Deep Impact. You know, two people coming out with the same business plan at the same time.
Same business plan.
I'd say the trash artist. I want to know more about him before ruling him out.
Okay. All right. We will have more information on these murder cases and some potential leads in this case coming up next week on Robin Akiva Solve a Murder Spree. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Robin Akiva Solve a Mass Murder Spree. I am Rob Sestrino, back with my co-host, Akiva Winokur. And we have a lot to talk about this week. We have some new leads, some new breaks in this case, some potential conflicts of interest, as well as we discuss many different aspects of these ongoing cases of the murder of Jenny Anders and Grant Jordan, Akiva.
Yeah, in some ways it feels like we're making progress, and in other ways it's almost like we're no closer to solving the murders than we were, you know, 3 episodes ago.
One step forward, 2 steps back, new information coming to light here as we discuss these cases. Akiva, we are going to take our listeners on a journey into the forensics of a Manhattan high-rise HVAC system.
Yeah, that's where they want to go, so they'll like that.
Okay. All right. So in a big apartment high-rise, there is a high-pressured suction system which allows the people to vacuum without the lugging a vacuum around. All you have to do is connect a hose. Have you ever operated a system like this, Akiva?
Come on. No, of course not.
We talked about earlier in this episode, a couple of weeks earlier, that we talked about some of the interesting items found in the HVAC system of Grand Jordan, including a used condom.
Mm-hmm. I'm surprised there weren't dozens.
Surprised. Yes. The used condom, we did not discuss that had some red dots on the used condom. I did not think that that was going to be of any interest, but it does turn out that that was actually sand on the condom.
Mm, I've never heard that one before.
That is a new one to me as well. And there also was some red sand found on the doormat as well.
Yeah. Any idea where the sand could be coming from?
Yes, it appears to be the type of sand which is used to make Buddhist sand art.
Mm-hmm. Now, is that related to the trash art?
We don't know. It's possible. But I don't believe that trash art is Buddhist, although the paper crane, maybe there could be some tie-ins. We'll have to see. We'll have to see in ongoing episodes. Let's discuss the trash artist that we are following the story of the trash artist on the train, leaving the blue party. And we find out that the trash artist who made the origami crane, that while the victim, Jenny Anders, was burned by the paper crane, it turns out that the trash artist claims, no, that paper burned him, Akiva.
Yes, we have seen a flashback where that appears to be the case.
Yes, and it burned his fingers. But the trash artist, that he loves being on these blue parties because after the party is over, maybe this is why there's no remains of the party. The trash artist then collects all of the garbage off the floor mm-hmm. of the subway.
And I don't know where else in New York City you could find trash, like literally a small knapsack full of it. So I get why he likes it, you know, the blue parties, as opposed to just walking on the streets for 2 seconds.
Yes. And so Randy Kern brings him in because that it's such a fertile ground for his trash art. He gets to collect so much trash after the parties. And to prove it, he just dumps out his bag of trash in front of the crime scene investigators.
Does nobody ever ask for a lawyer on these shows? It seems like a bad idea.
No lawyers necessary. If you're a trash artist, I think you're your own lawyer.
Yeah, I mean, you don't have a lawyer necessarily on retainer, but maybe just don't speak to the cops without someone present.
Yes. So the crime scene investigators will collect up all the trash and use that for part of their investigation moving forward. We are going to have some interesting updates this week for you as well about the person of interest, Veronica Perez. You remember Veronica Perez, right?
Of course, who could forget her?
Veronica Perez, she was the last roommate of Mr. Grant Jordan, and she was, it turns out, a person who bid $1,000 recently to go on a charity date with Mr. Grant Jordan as his roommate. Now, did Veronica Perez also send donuts or pastry to the crime scene investigators?
I'm not sure. Did she?
It seems as though the crime scene investigators had some sort of cake topper, which was the exact same one that was found inside the lungs of Grant Jordan. And it seemed like that they were able to deduce that that was somehow related to Veronica.
Interesting.
to Veronica Perez. And so they also found out that Veronica Perez was interested in getting married to Mr. Grant Jordan. She was registered places all over town.
Yeah, as Veronica Perez Jordan, which, you know, they weren't even married yet. She was using his name. I mean, who would have bought, if nobody knew that they were actually a couple, who would have actually bought them stuff off the registry is my question.
Yeah. Also, he's very wealthy, you know, that people, you know.
A little tacky. A little tacky.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. And so.
Maybe send something, you know, here's a charity thing, you know, send some money to a nonprofit.
And so that we are seeing that the crime scene investigators are starting to wonder, maybe could Veronica Perez indeed be a crazy person with a motive? That's their words, not mine.
Yes. It seems like there is definitely, again, we know she cannot be the murderer because she's already said she did not murder him. She could be involved, but she cannot be the murderer.
Yes.
But it does seem like she may be a crazy person.
Veronica Perez seemed to want to marry Grant Jordan. And who could blame her as a man who had it all? The indoor pool, bachelor pad, $2 million spread with the paper thin walls, and New York City's hottest and most eligible bachelor. Who can blame Veronica Perez for wanting to tie him down?
Yeah, that sounds like what every guy in New York City's dream.
Yes.
I will say, Stella, or Detective Stella, just runs circles around Veronica.
Yes. So we get a classic good cop, bad cop scenario where the other crime scene investigator is starting to badger her a little bit. But here comes Stella Bonacera, who really plays Veronica Perez like a fiddle. And she says, oh, guys, they just don't understand it. They don't get it, do they? And she said, but Grant did. Grant got it. He was one of the good ones. She seems like she still loves Grant Jordan, although she doesn't seem too broken up about his death.
Not broken up about the death, which maybe that's, you know, maybe she was trying to become his heir, right? Maybe, you know, he doesn't seem to have any family who's with the investigators. It's possible she was trying to get that sweet, you know, money and the
Grant Jordan money.
Grant.
Yes.
It's the Grant Jordan money. You can't joke around with it. We've also saw her mention to Grant that the cake topper people looks just like them, and Grant very rudely,
yes,
I must
well,
say.
Let's, Akiva, that mm-hmm. we were able to have a audio recording of a flashback to the night in, or one of the nights leading up to the murder of Grant Jordan. This was where Veronica, the roommate of Grant Jordan, seemed to go maybe jump the gun a little bit and bought a cake topper, which was a bride and a groom. And Veronica was so excited to show Grant Jordan what she had found. Let's flash back to an audio recording of that night.
Isn't this cute? Look, it looks just like us.
You're just my maid, Veronica. Get a grip.
I don't want to say it, Rob, but I think the murder may have been justified. That's pretty rude.
Look at this cake topper. It looks just like us. And Grant Jordan says to her, you're just my maid. Get a grip.
Yeah. Get a grip. Just my maid, get a grip.
And we see he like throws the cake topper very recklessly where the top falls into the pool.
Lands in the pool. Yes. Very interesting.
Yes.
Grant, at this point, if this is how he treats women and his employees,
yes.
I mean, the suspect list is endless at this point.
Yes. Was this the point in which then Veronica was fired?
I think maybe not that second, but yeah, I think this is probably the last. Once she's mentioning, hey, that looks like us and we should get married, I think that's it. I think
right.
He's terminating his employee.
There's been some sort of a miscommunication where that he looks at her as his maid and she thinks that they are engaged to be married. So there's been some sort of
tales
a communication.
Old as time. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Just the minor communication error.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. But that when we're talking about a Buddhist sand painting, Veronica Perez is no Buddhist. So it seems as though there is another party perhaps in the mix here.
Mm-hmm. And evidence is pointing to the neighbors. We knew the neighbors would have to circle back and be involved, right?
Yes. And
nothing happens in this world, in Mac Taylor's world, that's not connected. They don't just show us things for a reason.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Grant Jordan. This is the greater Mac Taylor universe. Yes.
The Mac Taylor universe. There are no coincidences. We've learned that.
Okay. All right. So Mac Taylor, that all of this is going on. We mentioned several weeks ago on this podcast that all of this took place around Mac Taylor's birthday, and he selflessly was working the case of Jenny Anders, and he seems driven by the fact that James McQueen is a nemesis, and he would love nothing more than to be able to finally put James McQueen behind bars.
Yeah, it does seem to be the Taylor-McQueen feud maybe has been boiling for 6 years, and some people think that he's almost too obsessed with it.
Now, you and I had talked on last week's podcast that Ox, a.k.a. Sheldon Hawks, appeared to have met Jenny Anders in flashback, and we did get confirmation of that, where Sheldon met Jenny Anders at a party some months ago, gave her his phone number. She held on to this phone number for months and months, then gave said phone number to the trash artist who turned it into the origami paper crane, who then she put it back on her person. And also this caused a chemical burn on her. And so once Mac Taylor found out about this, one of his own crime scene investigators not only knew Jenny Anders, not only met her, didn't say anything, and she also died with his phone number, with Sheldon's phone number on her person. Well, Mac Taylor has seen enough, and he is not happy, Akiva.
This lab does not make compromises. We do not take shortcuts. We follow the evidence. Science is our integrity. You're off the case, Sheldon.
Sheldon's off the case.
Whoa. Well, that's a real shocker. I will say that's Dr. Sheldon to him, by the way. That's stunning. To me, I'm reeling. Now you asked me last episode if Sheldon is a suspect. I said no. I still think no, but I wouldn't rule it out.
Can't be. I'd be shocked if that was.
Yeah,
if that was
just
a
bad
suspect.
Judgment.
Suspect. I mean, what's the motive? Yes, he knew her. He gave her his phone number. Maybe she ghosted him.
Fun fact: Sheldon, not an NYPD detective. He's just a CSI guy.
Just a CSI guy. And so Sheldon had an interesting take on all of this. He feels like, hey, why are you taking me off the case? Maybe your unfinished business with James McQueen is clouding your judgment, Mac Taylor.
Wow. Double haymakers.
How dare you? How dare you, sir? How dare you, Sheldon?
Man, tensions are running high, and I get it. This is now a double murder. We got a lot on our plate. We don't even know if they're really connected yet. We don't know how, you know, it's almost over. We don't know how it's going to end. Yeah. We only have two episodes left of this podcast.
Yes.
Maybe they don't solve the murders. Maybe that we have to retitle this, and it's Robin Akiva try to solve a murder.
Mm-hmm. Akiva, do you think... do you have any evidence that is connecting the case of Grant Jordan and Jenny Anders at this point?
It's keeping me up at night. I really don't. The other thing keeping me up at night is the trash artist mentioned something called diaper lice.
Yes.
That is truly keeping me up at night. I didn't know what that is, but I also would like to announce I'm not having more children.
And throw out the crappy movie diapers.
Yes. No more crappy movie diapers. We're putting that in the hat. 1997 Packers Broncos Super Bowl hat. They might not be connected. We've been assuming all along that they are connected, but perhaps they're just two separate crimes. And that's why we're, you know, investigating them both separately.
Okay. We will have more updates for you next week as we continue. The evidence pours in. If you have any tips about these cases, you can email us needapodcast@robhasawebsite.com. Anything you want to say until next time, Akiva?
Don't get diaper lice.
Don't get diaper lice. Okay. We'll talk to you next week on Rob and Akiva Solve a Murder Spree. To prove I'm Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the finale of Robin Akiva Solve Series of Murders. And I am Rob Cesternino here with my co-host, Akiva Winokur. And we have some huge news in these cases that we're following this week.
Can I just say one thing, Rob?
Yes.
Ladies and gentlemen, we got them.
We have broken both of these cases wide open and can talk about some of the conclusions that our reporting has produced here in these cases, Akiva.
I don't want to say that we solve the cases, but we do definitely get all the credit for it.
Okay. I guess we should begin with the case of Grant Jordan that we have been following for some weeks here on the podcast. And So we talked about a big break in the case, which came up last week, where some Buddhist sand art was found both on a used condom. I'm not really sure exactly how that came to be. And then also on the doormat of Grant Jordan. And the crime scene investigators interrogated a nearby Buddhist artist.
Yeah, I feel like just narrowing down the Buddhist artists that play with the red sand art and having one be the next door neighbor, that's a pretty easy solve.
Yes. And so the crime scene investigators brought this man. Do we know this suspect's name? Person of interest?
No, not important enough to have a name. Handsome. He's just guy. The next door neighbor. Handsome guy. Guy number two, neighbor, perhaps not getting a, you know, if this was a TV show, perhaps not getting the full like SAG-AFTRA, speaking part with a name money, but maybe just like the, you know, the extra type role.
Yes. And as a practitioner of the Buddhist sand art, he needs complete silence to be able to practice his craft.
Yeah, it was an accident. I mean, he had no intention. It was not a premeditated murder. I'd say this guy probably gets out in 15 years, but he admitted to the cop that, listen, yeah, I need quiet to make my art, and now he'll have all, well, I don't know if he'll have quiet, but he'll have all the time he wants.
Don't know about accident. You know, he...
Not premeditated.
Not premeditated. Just in a fit of rage, as, you know, many Buddhist artists often, you know, just snap
want
into
to do.
Fits of rage as they practice their, you know, Buddhist meditation. They go quickly into a fit of rage.
How successful of an artist was he that he's living next to the great Randy Jordan also?
I don't know. Maybe he was like a trust fund kid.
Yeah, it's very... that really checks out. That's true.
Yeah. And so our artist says that, look, that this guy, Grant Jordan, he never quieted down, always with the pool, always with the sex. I'm trying to make some Buddhist art over here. And really just folded very quickly under the interrogation. Very much did not stick to his story. In fact, comes straight out and admits that he was the murderer.
Yeah, like a cheap suit he folds.
I didn't mean to kill him. He was just always making so much noise.
Yeah. Book him down.
I feel like you wanted us to, you know, empathize with him a little bit.
It's like, yeah, that is annoying when you have a noisy neighbor.
You know, your neighbor's noisy and just go over and murder him. It's one of those things.
Yeah. He complained every single night except for the night in question when he just went over and killed him.
Yeah. Yeah. Did not exactly tie all the loose ends together in his plan.
Yes. And we speculated for many weeks on the podcast, was this murder connected to the murder of Jenny Anders? And absolutely not. Just the B murder.
Gotta say, I'm a little disappointed.
Yeah. Yeah. We've been tracking this case for several weeks. We thought that there'd be
a lot of spent a lot of time on this. We thought there'd be some connection. Maybe the art was connected to with the trash artist. That might have worked. Yeah. That might have made a lot of sense.
Really?
Two separate complicated artists in this series of murders.
A lot of red sand herrings in this case between the roommates, between Veronica Perez, between everything else going on. Turns out, nope, just a noise complaint.
Yeah, I would say Chekhov's red sand, they're calling it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So really threw everybody off. And you would think that the killer, that he had the presence of mind to close the pool, you would think he would have turned it off. Or maybe he just didn't even know how to do it.
You think? Yeah, I mean, I guess that's a complicated scenario. He's never been in in the apartment before, so I don't know how he could have.
Could he unplug it? I don't know, but you would think that
seems tricky.
You know, you think it would have still drove him crazy all night that he went over to go kill the guy because he was running the pool, and then he never ended up turning it off. He just put the guy in there and then kept it running, but closed it.
Yeah, yeah. I don't want to dispose of that guy. That's going to make a lot of noise.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So that's one case down, one to go. We need to go back to our ongoing case of Jenny Anders, the woman who was killed during a illicit rave aboard the New York City subway. We've had a lot of leads over these last couple of weeks on the podcast. We talked about the crime scene investigators who got into some turmoil during this investigation. It was Mac Taylor who had to come down hard on fellow investigator Sheldon Hawks in last week's podcast. We talked about that altercation. What we did not mention was this information that Sheldon knew this woman came by way of Mac Taylor's lady friend who was planning his big birthday.
Yeah, and we should have mentioned also that she did set up a date at the vending machine at 5 o'clock.
Yes. So a birthday vending machine date is still potentially in the cards for Mac Taylor, but there's still a lot of work to be done. The flask which contained the alcohol that Jenny Anders drank and was poisoned from and then collected subsequently by Mr. Trash Artist was reassembled by the team of crime scene investigators. And there were three sets of prints that were found on this flask, Akiva.
And whose were they?
One was Ms. Anders. Two was Randy Kearns, the man who runs the BYOB Blue Party. And then a third set of prints, which have not been able to be analyzed by our system.
Is that because they're so badly burnt?
Perhaps. That might be what the issue is. And so we're not able to put this all together. So we need to bring in Mr. Randy. We need to talk to him about what's going on. Randy Kern, because perhaps maybe Jenny Anders was never the target of this assassination. Maybe it was the runner of the Blue Party himself, Randy Kern.
You think so, Randy? Right, at this point, you're thinking maybe Randy was the murderer and not our buddy James.
Well, he was the target of the murder.
Randy was the target of the murder from our buddy James, and not
who could have wanted him dead, though.
Right, not a Jenny Anders.
Yeah. Yes, right. And so Randy Kern comes in for questioning, and so Mac Taylor wants to know one thing from you. Who gave you the flask? Now, Randy gave the flask back to Jenny Anders, who she drank from it and then died. But who gave the flask to Randy?
Yeah. And we, our crack team at Robin Akiva Solve Murder, we were able to see a flashback where we got the answer to that question.
Right. Now, you and I were thinking of all of the different potential people who could have potentially had the motive to kill Randy Kern. And you and I instantly both thought James McQuinn. He's got to be. He's the person that he threw Randy under the bus, under the subway so quickly earlier in the episode.
Yeah. I mean, he was our first suspect.
Yeah. And really our only suspect.
Yeah. Our only suspect. And we were
really, we can't even think of one other person other than potentially crime scene investigator Sheldon Hawks that might have even, or the garbage guy,
the trash man. The trash artist
none of those really, you know, made a lot of sense. So, we've been working the case and have felt like that James McQuinn, the person who owns the airplane party line, that maybe he was very jealous that maybe Randy was making so much money on these illicit blue subway parties. And so the crime scene investigators ask Mr. Kern under investigation, who gave you the flask? Randy Kern says, yeah, I don't remember.
Yeah, you know, that old thing with the Blue Party. You don't know who gave you the flask that murdered somebody.
Yeah. And so the crime scene investigators, they do some more research and they realize that the substance that was in the flask there was lead and there was cadmium in the flask, outside of the flask. And the cadmium, that's found on the ocean floor. Now, if you recall, several weeks ago, we talked about how James McQuinn talked about that he just got done deep sea diving.
Mm-hmm.
And that wasn't code.
Yeah. Like we said, a terrible excuse. He should not, especially when we had a water-related murder out there. Although I guess he didn't know that because he was not involved in that murder.
Also,
that's confusing, right? We had we thought that was an obvious clue, the two water-related murders. And they had nothing to do with each other.
Yeah, we thought so. But no, it does appear that he did go on an expedition to the ocean floor. But also, inside the flask was hydrazine analog, which is used in experimental jet fuel, the kind that was used by James McQuinn's fleet of airplanes.
Yes, only his airplanes have this special jet fuel.
Experimental fuel. This does seem like this would be, if you were going to try to assassinate someone, Akiva, and you were some sort of like airline industry magnate, it does seem like poisoning your enemy with experimental jet fuel seems like that could be a tell.
Yeah, like if I was murdering someone, it probably shouldn't be with, you know, what am I famous for having? I don't know. But whatever, like with you, like you wouldn't murder someone with the podcast mic equipment. That would be
crazy. If I like was going to strangle somebody with an XLR cable, feel like that would be a little bit of a, maybe somebody was trying to frame me. That's what they should do.
Oh, sure. Yes. We've all thought of that for sure. Yes.
Sure. Okay. So crime scene investigators realize, hold on a second. Find Randy Kern. He was definitely trying to be assassinated, or the target of an assassination from Mr. James McQuinn. Somebody find Randy Kern. And luckily, the crime scene investigators get out to the airport and find Randy Kern with a pistol at the airport waiting for James McQuinn.
Yeah. Very sort of dramatic scenes we're having here.
Yeah. So a big arrest was made where Randy Kern was the subject of an assassination. He is now in police custody for the attempted murder of James McQuinn.
Yeah. Well, and it seems like this would be a very dramatic moment, but I feel like this whole thing, kind of just ends abruptly.
Well, then we see James McQuinn come down off the tarmac where, ironically, Mac Taylor has just saved his life.
Mm-hmm.
But also has some bad news.
Very bad news, I would say.
He's being charged with a murder. And James McQuinn says, you can't prove a thing. I didn't do anything.
That's what you're always supposed to say to the police, right? You can't prove it.
You can't prove anything.
It's obvious I did it. You just can't prove it. That's what you're supposed to say to the police.
And Mac Taylor says, hey, unwrap that bandage on your hand. That's chemical burn. Mm-hmm. From jet fuel, the same jet fuel that was used to poison Jenny Anders. Take him away.
Yep. And that's it. We solved our murders.
You're done. Yeah. Okay.
He seems like pretty calm that he's going to jail for the rest of his life. Although this wasn't, he tried to murder someone. If you tried to murder someone, but you murder someone else, is that like premeditated or is that more like manslaughter or woman slaughter in this case?
It's not premeditated. I mean, that was not what he was trying to do.
But he was trying to murder.
He was trying to murder somebody, but
he murdered the wrong person.
I don't know if you get less jail time for being inept, where I was trying to murder somebody, but I ended up murdering the wrong person.
Should we do another episode? We have like a law expert come on.
Let's get our team of legal analysts Antonio Mazzaro and Ali Lasher and Chester and see if we can really crack this case.
Oh, that's the dream team. That should be the new Supreme Court.
Hot bench. Of coming up. So, Akiva, for Jenny Anders, this was really a tragic case of really being in the wrong place in the wrong time. Yes, she was an associate, perhaps a roommate of James McQuinn. She let James McQuinn snort ecstasy off of her legs before attending the blue party. And then James McQuinn hands off the flask to Randy Kern. Did Randy Kern open the carafe and then say, oh, this smells like jet fuel. I'm going to give this back to...
No, he didn't even get it. She grabbed that out of his hand before he could. He was going to take a swig. He just didn't get to because she took it. He could have very easily, by the way, James McQuinn could have very easily said, hey, that's like my grandma's flask. You need to give that back. He did not care.
Yeah. So.
Oh, the wrong person's going to die. No biggie.
No biggie. Yeah. So, very, very sad story. We do have some happy stories to report that Mac Taylor and Sheldon did get back on the same page. That yes. Sheldon talked about that. Yes, he did meet Jenny Anders, and he's just wrecked with the thought that what if he would have gotten her phone number and called her? Maybe he could have been the guy that she talked to instead of going and hanging out with James McQueen, letting yeah. James McQueen snort ecstasy off her legs.
Yeah, it could have been his legs.
Could have been his legs. That could have been their thing, but no. So he's just, you know, he should have called her. She seems like a fun time.
And also, you know, it really was a coincidence that he even met her, because she was, again, not only was she not the intended victim, she was the accidental victim. So now we just have one of our detectives randomly running into the accidental victim, which yes. seems even more random.
Also, Mac Taylor, he does get to finally finish his birthday celebration. He and his girlfriend will get to the vending machine.
Dr. Payne Driscoll, by the way. I know we have not revealed yes. her name for the first five episodes.
Yes.
And looks a lot like Claire Forlani.
she is going to surprise him with something out of the vending machine. Looks like that they get a set of Hostess cupcakes, Akiva. I'm mm-hmm. sure that you were trying to hold back vomit from coming up as they ate chocolate cupcakes.
Yeah, it looked like, but it also looked like they weren't in wrappers. Like they just, like there was just out of the package chocolate cupcakes coming out of the vending machine. It might have been a very interesting vending machine. I don't know what's going on at the NYPD, but maybe they have ready-made foods there.
Okay. Akiva, you and mm-hmm. I have discussed these two mass murders on our true crime podcast as we've solved these murders. Any takeaways in our final episode of Robin Akiva Solve a Murder Spree?
I'm just glad there's not a serial killer on the loose. We solved both of them. I think they'll both be brought to justice. You don't have to worry about them on the streets for a long time. Randy Kern also probably going to go to jail for a little while.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I think so. Yeah.
Maybe yeah. So I think all these bad actors are off the street. And I only hope that, you know, Veronica Perez Jordan can find the, you know, another man to trick hoodwink into marrying her.
Yes. Could somebody pick up the torch of the Blue Party? Do you think that trash artist could potentially get the ball rolling?
I have a feeling that the NYPD, although they didn't stop it after the death, because I think they needed to interview people, I think they're going to really put this to, first of all, you know, the main obviously party runner is in jail. I have a feeling they're going to put an end to this Blue Party.
Okay.
But maybe a Green Party will start.
Oh, perhaps. And then will Michael Bloomberg be able to do anything to help out Mr. James McQueen now that he has been charged with these crimes?
I think he's going to pretend he never met him.
Okay. All right. Akiva, any other thoughts?
Yeah, I think I'm just glad that this is the first time we ever tried to solve a murder. And I'm glad we're already experts. We're so good at it.
I'm also very glad that once upon a time we had an idea for a podcast where we were going to watch season 3, episode 7 of CSI New York every single week on the podcast.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I forgot about that.
I thank God and Buddha and every being that we did not
all the sand
ever come close to.
We could have watched this episode. That was supposed to be the podcast. That we were supposed to watch this episode every week.
We could have been 29 episodes into watching this episode.
No, we would not have been
29
episodes.
We would be
angry threads on Facebook.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Let's get to the wheel. All right, Akiva, let's talk about the wheel. You know, we went right into our true crime podcast this week. We didn't really mm-hmm. talk about any of the fallout from the TV theme song bracket from last week.
Yeah. Do you think there's a lot of fallout? Why are you using that word?
Oh, there was fallout, certainly. So just that here's the story of the post-production on that. Mm-hmm. So ended up taking a really long time, you know, 3.5-hour podcast. I believe that is the longest RNAP episode that we've done so far. And I guess depending on how this wheel spin goes today, I believe that should hold episode 28.
Unless the wheel breaks, I think we're
right. You know. So we recorded that late into Sunday night. I had to get the podcast out, and Monday is a very busy day with the wand off and everything, and I also had to get into The Walking Dead, because that sort of we recorded that podcast in the time slot that I would normally record The Walking Dead, but I wanted to go to bed before I didn't want to wake up on Tuesday to a bunch of angry messages from Renap listeners about the podcast and how that they didn't get to listen to it yet, and they were angry. So I stayed up late-ish for me to edit the podcast, got it out, went to sleep, and woke up to just a tweet storm of angry messages about how that the audio was terrible. Did Chester call in from a spaceship? Chester, get a new microphone. This is garbage. What is wrong with Chester's audio? And that there was a double Chester audio track in the version that I uploaded, and people were very upset. And rightfully so.
Yeah, rightfully so. But you got up pretty soon after the messages started coming in. You fixed it right away. I do think there's people out there who probably didn't realize, who maybe didn't see the post on Facebook or on Twitter, and they listened to the whole thing with double Chester, or alternatively, they didn't, and maybe they could go back now if they want to and listen to a pristine audio version. But yeah, I think because that's what downloads to your phone first, you might be stuck with that unless you realize that you're stuck.
Yeah, if you have it, delete it, and then you should have the right one. So, and then there was a second firestorm of all of our terrible takes, people killing us, people killing Chester for the bracket was bad, our takes were bad, and I feel like that it was almost universal that the comments that we got were, you guys are idiots. Chester doesn't know what he's talking about. Everything was horrible. And I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I'd say it was the most feedback we've got from any episode.
Yeah.
We got hundreds and hundreds of tweets. Nobody was like, you guys nailed it. You were perfect. Maybe a couple people said that, but
very few.
But yeah, I think, listen, people listened to the whole 4 hours. They liked it. They just didn't like our opinions. We were very clear with the Chester part that we had no say, and even Chester had no say over what songs got picked. That was based on previous lists. If you hated that Rob and I advanced a certain show over another show, although I do think people kind of liked the winner. We didn't really get a lot of about the winner. It was really the early round decisions.
The journey of you guys made all terrible decisions, but I enjoyed it. So mixed feedback. So we think overall.
But I'll take that. Yeah, we'll take that. Yeah. The loud minority of listeners liked it. I will say people really, people are already saying you got to do this again. And we've said bracket season is over.
It's over.
We're not doing a bracket till next March.
March 2020.
Can we say in March 2020 that there will be a theme song too with all new songs, Winter Faces, Fresh Prince?
Okay, I'm okay with that. That's fine. We could talk about that next.
Because we could get Scrubs and Green Acres and Dawson's Creek and all the songs that people say were snubbed. Maybe we'll have a listener vote, because the listeners complained, but
that's fine.
I believe they had a chance. Maybe we didn't do a good job, but they had a chance.
Maybe we can get the tabulator involved. The people submit your top five, and then the top 44 results, and maybe
it's a good idea. Okay, we got a year for that,
and it should be a thrifty 32.
Yeah, 44 was in show. Although not one person said this is too long. That was, it's funny. People love quantity.
I definitely got a tweet about that. I said, hey, I fixed the podcast. And then somebody was like, the runtime is still 3 hours and 30 minutes. So work on that.
No, I will say they're in the just an absolute minority, because people want quantity. That's what they've definitely made clear.
All right, Akiva. So let's talk about Mount Renatmore and what is going to go onto the wheel this week. I believe next week is going to be episode number 30 of Rob and Akiva Need a Podcast.
Yeah, episode 30. We haven't really done any episode rings. We said we'd do it after 25, but we didn't really have a mailbag after that episode. People do want to rate. Maybe after 32. No, that's a bracket. Maybe after 30, we'll have a little. Oh, by the way, big props to Ben, Ben, my personal assistant, who found us this episode. Where can we have to figure out where to give people.
I will put a link in the opening of the podcast before the everything. I will have a link to if anybody wants to go to robswebsite.com/CSINY to watch the episode along from that terrible website.
Yeah, so we have, I mean, I guess let's get to the first suggestion for the mailbag.
Well, actually, we did not the last couple episodes get into things that were from 10 back to talk about putting them back onto the wheel. I think we last talked about episode 17, pranking the listeners. We have our idea tank or our total idea live, so people are going to call into us, so we kind of have that.
I'm going to keep a find a third wheel. I think there's two versions of that already.
But that's not on the wheel, Robin.
That's not on the wheel, but that's sort of waiting for the Robin Akiva Total Idea Request Live to maybe come in right after that.
Episode number 18 was Robin Akiva Need a Podcast number 18. I can't believe it's just banter. Should that be back on the wheel?
Eventually, but not right now.
Okay. And then number 19, Robin Akiva Need a Podcast number 19 was Conspirapod.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, a lot of people wanted more Conspirapod with Antonio Mazar. Should that be back on the wheel? Conspirapod 2.
One of our most popular episodes.
Yes.
I think we have so many ideas in the hopper. I don't think we need to go back and potentially have it, you know, hit the wheel, hit it next week. And then we're looking at only 11 weeks, you know. 11 episodes, maybe 3 months between podcasts.
The problem is that when we say that, then it never ends up getting back on the wheel.
Like, okay, so like here's what I'm going to do.
Yes.
I thought about this. We're going to put it in the wheel waiting room. I'm going to make a note. And we're going to discuss in like 5 or 6 more episodes, hey, should we put this back on? And then we'll do that every... Because it's definitely coming back on.
Yeah.
And it will come on relatively soon. But I don't think it needs to be this week.
Okay.
But I will make a note. Maybe every 5 episodes we'll see, hey, are we ready for that? And maybe 5 episodes from now we will be ready for that. But it's hard to really keep going back to sequels when we have so many things, like the Argon Trail, let's just say, that have been waiting their turn patiently for 30 episodes and haven't gotten picked yet.
Well, first things first, I do think that we need to get Antonio to sign off on Conspirapod 2.
We have not asked Antonio. That is a big deal. Now that we said we want to have
Antonio,
it on.
Right. If he wants
he could drive
to come
a hard bargain
for Conspirapod 2. And then if he's on board, then I think we should green light it.
Okay. So I can ask Antonio.
Yeah.
I do think next week we should clear out the wheel waiting room instead of the mailbag because we have about 20 things in there now.
Okay. For episode number 30. Okay. All right.
Okay. Idea number one. Well, it's really related to, we haven't done a fishbowl request in a while because the fishbowl is pretty full. And I have a feeling the fishbowl is about to get picked because it's at, I think, over 50% of the wheel.
11 spots right now.
Yeah, that's more than I think everything else combined, or very close to it.
Mm-hmm.
So Jennifer writes in and says,
just under 50%.
Okay. After last week's podcast, what about season 3, episode 7, Golden Girls?
Okay.
Robin Akiva are the Golden Guys.
Golden Guys. Okay, well, I like the branding of the Golden Guys, so I'm good to put that in the fishbowl.
But that's fishbowl, right? Because I like the name Golden Guys,
yeah.
But
we're
not
doing a whole podcast retrospective of the Golden Girls. We're going to talk about season 3, episode 7 of Golden Girls.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. And were you a Golden Girls fan?
I mean, I was not a Golden Girls stan, but it used to be on Saturday nights on NBC. They used to have like a whole block of shows.
How old are you?
I think I was, I don't know the dates on it, but I think I was, you know, it's like late 80s to the early 90s. So I'm somewhere between the ages of 8 to 12.
I was just nervous that you were like in high school and that was your Saturday night watching the Golden Girls.
I mean, I don't think it would have not been my Saturday night had the Golden
the
Girls.
Only thing stopping it wasn't on, not because you were too busy. Okay.
Yeah, so it was part of like a NBC Saturday night block with like Empty Nest and like Nurses, I think, was another show that was on during that. And so like it was almost like the JV Thursday night block that NBC had, like a Saturday night block of like a bunch of sitcoms. And they had a couple times where they did like, oh, it's a hurricane, and all the shows like had like the same thing going on. But I did follow the Golden Girls, and also that my great grandmother was a big fan of it.
Wow. Okay, I could see that everyone's great grandma probably liked the Golden Girls.
Yes, she was a bit of a Estelle Getty, and I can't remember her character name off the top of my head.
Mm-hmm.
Dorothy's mom. Well, yeah.
I don't. I've seen it, but I don't know the name. So. I'm looking forward to watching that. All right. Number two of the 4 Mount Renatmore ideas for this week. This comes from Tom Palmer on Twitter.
Sophia. Sophia, I will have gotten 37 angry tweets in the time it took me to remember that.
Delete the tweet. Yeah, Rob got it. All right, Rob and Akiva need a drinking game. He wants to come up with the official drinking game for RANAP. Here are some of his suggestions. Whenever Akiva suggests getting a guest that they actually have a 0% chance of ever booking.
Okay.
Yeah, we never did get Jerry Seinfeld for our Seinfeld podcast or any of the core four. Another idea he has is whenever Rob shoots down a good idea for fear of the listeners getting mad.
I don't know what this is as a podcast. Like, we're coming up with all...
I don't think this is a podcast. I think this is just like a drinking game that listeners could play.
Oh, okay.
So if they want to... Anytime I suggest a guest, hey, we should have got Gary Sinise for this episode, Rob.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He has a lot of... he has a following on Twitter. He's very big into the troops. That's why I think they had his pretend character be an ex-Marine. It's like that's sort of TV stolen valor because he loves the Marines and he does a lot of like...
You don't think it's
a lot of troop charity.
It's a Lieutenant Dan thing?
I mean, I think that's why he goes for the roles where he's a former or current troop for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I don't know what we're doing with that. So the listeners are making...
We're not doing anything.
This
is, isn't really a podcast idea. It's just if you're at home and you want to drink, even though last I said nobody should ever drink.
Has anybody actually ever played a drinking game that was like anything that was like every time this happens, have you drink?
I think people...
Has
who
it
like
ever actually happened
do.
Once in the entire history of people?
Yes, it definitely has happened once. I will bet that.
Like, here's a drinking game. People play drinking games with cards
now,
or quarters.
Are you shooting down a good idea for fear of the listeners getting mad right now? And they should be drinking.
I don't know who came up with this. Is it Gregory?
No, this is from Tom Palmer.
Tom. What did Gregory suggest?
Who's Gregory? That was last week. Gregory was the food hot take.
Okay, all right.
Oh, update on that. We got some takes, but I don't think enough to do a podcast. So that's right now on hold. Not even in the waiting room.
Okay, if people have the food hot takes, they want to get
there. We got a lot of hot takes, but none of them were really spicy. They were kind of lukewarm.
Mm-hmm. Is that about the food?
Yes, the food. It was a lot of like, I like to put X on Y, and that's weird, right? It wasn't a lot of like, the worst food in the world is steak and steak sauce.
Yeah. Can I throw something out there?
Mm-hmm.
Hearing about food is boring.
Yeah, because you hate food. I think hearing about food is the most interesting thing.
Yeah. Okay. I don't care what people are eating.
You just had Haley Strong on a podcast. Did you guys discuss food at all?
Yeah, we talked about this. And I talked about how that, look, I don't think food is that exciting.
I bet Haley was horrified.
It's not. There's much more exciting things than food.
Okay. Speaking of something not as exciting as food, Keep Talking Timothy wrote in with an idea for this week's wheel. And he says, my idea is for an episode that's a live episode, much like a patron cast.
Rob and Akiva are live.
No, okay, but that's only a small part of his idea. He says, my idea is very similar to one of those dueling piano bars where you pay a dollar to get the piano players to play his song. Instead, viewers or listeners can PayPal or Venmo or Zello, I guess, you a dollar and tell you what topic to talk about. You have to talk about that topic for at least 5 minutes. Or until someone outbids the current topic price. So someone says, here's a dollar, talk about Survivor. But then someone says, no. Here's $2. You guys need to talk about Game of Thrones.
Well, if we did, the money should go to charity. This should be like, because it feels like a cash grab.
It does feel like a cash grab. Keep Talking Timothy wants the money to go to him. That was his plan.
Yeah, we're sort of like webcam guys at this point. Yeah. Like, hey, we'll talk
about... Is that
about,
an episode? Robin and Akiva
we'll
become
webcam
guys.
We'll talk about whatever you want, as long as you're paying. Okay.
Also, I don't think a dollar is the minimum. I think we got to make like $5.
I don't know what the, you know, mechanism is used. Like,
this sounds like a very technically complicated
like
episode.
Look, I think if it was a good cause and we had a charity and we could and we could do this and it could be fun.
The actual podcast, because again, especially if this is video, sounds like it would be unlistenable for this episode. It's like us talking about the Mets for 30 seconds and then somebody's like, no. You guys need to talk about, politics.
Yeah, and then somebody comes in with like $50 and it's like, talk about, the wall. Okay, great.
Right. I think the actual podcast would be unlistenable. It is a fun idea. This seems like very like 2012, Rob, like something you would have done back in the day.
Maybe.
Have you ever been to a dueling piano bar? You have been to a dueling piano bar?
Oh, I have been, yes.
So have I, and I've never really been anywhere, so I'm shocked I've been, but once I went to a birthday party.
Do you like it?
I like it, but every time they play a song I like, I get psyched up, and then someone else throws in. And by the way, I never give a dollar. I'm too cheap to pay for the dueling piano bars. But yeah, someone else outbids with the song I liked, and they play it, and then I'm mad.
Yeah, okay. What are you going to do?
All right, so that's 3 out of 4.
Okay.
Okay, here's a complicated one from Lemoyne. My suggestion for The Wheel is partly inspired by the Hot Takeoff and partially inspired by Rob's recent binge of The Good Place. Mm-hmm. Yes, I'm a total cheaty. The idea is called Rob and Akiva Enter the Good Place. Here's how it worked. The listeners would work as architects and have to create an afterlife experience that would appear to be heaven for Rob and Akiva, but is actually eventually revealed to be a torture chamber. For example, someone could replicate a Seinfeld universe, which would initially seem fun until Rob and Akiva realize they're stuck with George and Kramer as friends for eternity. Listeners can send in their suggestions for this fake paradise, and Robert Akiva could judge the suggestions on how likely would the paradise appeal or fool them, and how miserable. This is so complicated.
It's very complicated, and it really counts on, like, right? We're having trouble getting people to send us, like, hey, what are some weird things you do with food? Now it's like, mm-hmm. all right, listener, send in afterlife experiences for...
Yeah, it is. It's very creative, but I think it's, like, so... it's too complicated.
It's too complicated, and I think that it would really need a lot of legwork.
That we're not willing to do.
Yes. But if Frail Mary wanted to write a fan fiction where we were dead and in the afterlife,
What's the status of that fan fiction? I guess we'll find out when next week we go through the Wheel waiting room.
Okay. All right. Akiva, anything else? I feel like that this was, we blew through this pretty quick.
Yeah, people do want quantity. Should we stall before we spin the wheel and get out of here?
Let's give me another, even if they're not good, give me another couple.
Oh, you want another idea? Okay. Trust me. They're not good. We do need a new sort of assortment. Right,
well,
of,
and let's just put the call to action. Need a podcast at robiswebsite.com or seinfeld@postshowrecaps.com.
Okay. This is from my friend Ari Gold. He says, in the era of peak TV, I'd love you guys to explore some of the earliest popular sitcoms and comedies and see how they hold up. My mother-in-law, shout out Mrs. Jacobson, recently claimed that Leave It to Beaver was the best show ever made. And though I value her opinion deeply, I'd love to hear you guys tear that apart or review it thoroughly. So his mother thinks that Leave It to Beaver is a better show than The Wire. Let's just say.
Okay.
And he nominates I Love Lucy, Leave It to Beaver, and Dragnet. You go decade by decade and pick three shows from each decade. This is the 50s. I guess next up would be the 60s.
Does anybody want to hear that? Does anybody want to hear us break down Leave It to Beaver?
No. I just love the fact that it's like she thinks it's the best show ever. Okay. That is a scorching thing. Kyle says the idea for The Wheel for me would be Rob and Akiva take quick shots at America's favorite thing or things that Rob is called too beloved to discuss. Throw inhibitions to the wind and give your takes on issues like Friends, The Office, Star Wars, Harry Potter, The Beatles, or anything else that may make someone upset. So this episode is called Too Beloved. Listeners could also write hot takes in and why they hate something that is generally loved. Too Beloved.
I think that there's something here, but what are we doing? We're just going to talk about this subject that's too beloved or why we don't like something that people really love?
I guess, yeah. People give us a list of like 20 things and we rip into them, you know, but do we have to rip into them?
We have to find a flaw in things that are beloved.
Okay.
I think I could do that.
Yeah. So it's like, I guess so we wait until the episode gets picked. Then it's like send in your things and then someone maybe, are we picking them or is there like a sort of a third party?
Well, I think that this one requires a third party. We need somebody.
Yeah, I agree. Because we can't know what's coming. We got to riff off the cuff.
We need somebody who's going to work on assembling the list of the 20 things that are like, and then we go for like two and a half minutes where we have to talk about, you know, find flaws with things that are almost universally beloved.
Okay, so Too Beloved.
I like that. I like that. I would say that it's waiting for somebody to sort of be like the architect of it.
Yes. Yeah, we need someone to really steer that ship.
Yes, but I'm very much okay with putting it into the waiting room and hearing.
Yeah, it's in the waiting room. Okay.
I like it.
Alrighty. Alright, do you want to hear one more?
One more crappy one, sure.
Okay, Rob and Akiva create a reverse bucket list that's called the effort list, the list of things they never want to do before they die. They each bring items. And through discussion and debate, they create the definitive list of the top 10 effort list for RANEP.
I mean,
just most things, like most leave things. The house.
Yeah. Right.
Like
right.
Most things are on her effort list. Almost everything is on her effort list.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, there's not a lot of things that I'm really, you know, trying to do.
No, I'm trying not to do almost anything.
Most, I don't know how we could even fit that into one podcast.
Like my effort list includes like ever go to a supermarket again.
But you love food.
Like, I don't want to go to a supermarket.
Like, I don't
understand. Yeah, but I don't go shopping. First of all, you get delivery now. And second of all, my wife likes to do the shopping anyway. Mm-hmm.
But you don't want to see what they have? I thought you love food so much.
I know what they have at the supermarket. What do you think? They got new stuff?
They get new stuff.
So sometimes she'll be like, hey, she knows what I like. She'll like text me like, hey, you want this? By the time I answer, she's already left the store.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, I don't think there's enough there.
Okay.
All right.
All right, but we added a couple things to the wheel waiting room. And next week, we're cleaning out the wheel waiting room. You're either getting into the room or you're off the wheel waiting room next week. Can we say that?
Yes. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, Akiva, let's talk about what's on the wheel. Season 3, episode 7, an all-time high, 11 spots on the wheel for the fishbowl.
Yeah, on the wheel list, what's the website for that again?
robhasawebsite.com/wheel list.
Will from America keeps that up, and you could really, there's a visual of it, and season 3, episode 7 is like Godzilla at this point. Like, it's taking over the whole thing.
Right. I believe that there will be a visual representation of what the wheel looks like as of this spin.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, it's scary.
And you can see what's in the fishbowl. I still need to pull some things out of the fishbowl that got kicked out way back when, but they're still currently in the fishbowl.
Ooh. Okay. That could be a scandal if it gets picked.
It could be a scandal because you have to remember what shouldn't be in the fishbowl, and we have to do it before the end of the episode. Okay.
Oh, I remember.
All right. Coin flip. Boom. Mm-hmm. Rob or Akiva will decide what is the subject of the next episode based on the flip of a coin.
For 28 so far.
Okay. It used to be Rob's choice and Akiva's choice, but we merged it into one. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Oregon Trail. Still has not been picked. The rise and fall of Jonathan Taylor Thomas. We call him JTT around here. Mm-hmm. MTV shows are trash. That's with Ali Lasher.
Can I stop you for a second?
Yeah.
So Ali Lasher, I don't know. Did I mention this on the show where she has a MTV's The Challenge podcast?
Yes.
And she wanted me to come on her show. And she mentioned on a podcast, hey, if you tweeted Akiva, maybe like 5 people tweeted him and he'll agree to come on the show. And like 65 people tweeted at me saying, hey, go on Allie's show. So I said, Allie, sure, I will go on your show. And then this week I was talking to her and I said, Allie, whenever you want, I'm willing to come on the show. And she said, no, sorry, you are banned.
You're banned? Why? Over the Missy thing? Over Missy?
No, no. Oh. She's, I think, still mad about that, but that's not why I'm banned.
Why are you banned?
I don't even know if I should say.
Well, I think you have to now.
Okay, well, I went on a different challenge podcast. And it went on. It was a Survivor show.
Yeah.
By the way, I might really get banned for saying this. I'm not sure if I'm supposed to say. But she, it was fair. She doesn't want to get guests who have had their takes used up on another show in the same season.
I hear that.
But I am banned for life, not just for this season, I was told.
Banned for life?
I think this is more about Missy than our podcast lives rent free in their podcast heads. We get mentioned a lot on that show.
Yes.
And I don't know what I can do. So I asked Allie, I said, what can I do to get unbanned for life and come on your show?
Yeah.
And she said, if at least 5 people tweet me saying unban Akiva.
Oh, you get that.
So you think we could get to 5 or we're deep into this podcast?
No, you can definitely get to 5.
Right, so at Lash tweets, L-A-S-H tweets, and just say unban Akiva. And if you want me to still be banned, then say don't unban Akiva.
Okay.
But by the way, can I say one more thing related to RANAP about that show?
Sure.
So they had an auction on the Challenge podcast, and they said, this went to some University of Michigan law school related charity where one person could bid. Do you know about this? Could bid to be on their podcast.
No, I didn't know.
You don't know about this at all?
No.
Wow. There's a lot going on the RHAP network that you don't know about. This is, wow. You gotta tighten up the, I don't know what you're tighten up. You gotta tighten something up.
Yeah,
people are just giving away guest spots on your network and you don't even know about it.
I don't need to listen to every minute of the podcast to know.
I feel like you should know, like, hey, we're auctioning off.
Oh, listen, believe me, when there's a problem, I hear about it.
Anyway, Ali Asher probably very mad at me now. Anyway, so they did an auction and it was bought for a lot of money, more money than Ali spent on buying four tickets behind a home plate at a Met game, which, by the way, I would have definitely wanted to bid on that.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like it was way too cheap. It was, I think, the $235 was the price of a spot on the Challenge podcast with Ali Lasher.
How much was it?
$235 it went for. It's a good price. But here's where this is all connected. It was bought by one Jeremy Hamilton. You know who Jeremy Hamilton is?
Jeremy Hamilton.
Where has he come in to play on RANAP
before? Did he go on one of the dates?
He went on a date.
Yes.
With Will,
yes.
At the vegan bakery, gluten-free bakery in San Francisco.
Yes.
He was either from Oakland or from Berkeley. I forget which one. And he also was one of our three finalists for our Jeopardy episode.
Right.
It was him, my friend AB, who I unfairly disqualified because we recorded the episode and he had a religious obligation. And it probably should have knocked him out. And then Melissa, who ended up winning the tiebreaker and was on the show. So Jeremy was so close to coming on our show and he was very excited to be a podcast guest.
Mm-hmm.
And he could taste it and then he lost it and he wanted to get the taste back. So he bid $235 to be on Ali Lasher's show. I did tweet at him and say,
and Brian.
I should only be mentioning Brian because Brian didn't ban me. Ali banned me.
Yes.
I told Jeremy that at any point for $234, he could probably come on the show. He wanted to be on this show. We didn't let him. And so people are, you know, they're getting our sloppy seconds. Like they're getting, you know, our rejected guests, basically, even though we like Jeremy.
Okay. All right. So let's try to get Akiva unbanned from the challenge.
Unban Akiva at Lash Tweets, but don't follow her.
Okay.
Just tweeted her.
All right. Then we have Robin Akiva need a life coach. That's with Caitlin Herman. Mm-hmm. Infomercials are trash with Eric Stein. Eric Stein was not happy with us song bracket. He felt like that we really screwed the pooch.
You know, he could be a part of the March 2020 bracket if he wants.
Okay, we'll see. So Chester and Eric Stein?
We'll figure it out. We could commit to 20 people on. No one's going to remember. It's a year from now.
Okay.
That will definitely not come back to bite us. Don't worry.
All right. The Royal Rumble is on the wheel. The crappy movie diaper / hat. And we're considering rebranding the crappy movie diaper after hearing about diaper lice from trash artist. But as of right now, it is still there. Total Ideas Live is the spot.
Can we call it Total Idea Request Live? So the Total Request Live is still in there?
Turl?
Yeah, Turl. Okay. Exactly.
All right. Millennials Killed It, I believe. Is Dr. Amanda Rabinowitz the guest, or is she just putting that together?
It's up to her, I think. She can be the guest, or she could just put it together.
Okay.
Probably busy lady.
And then Win Shut Up Tim's Money is in play this week.
Yes. Yes, that is in play.
Okay. Now, was there any updates from our ombudsperson, Aisha Akiva?
I don't think so. I think we're good. I don't think we had any questions for last week.
Okay. All right. Yeah, it was a short wheel segment last week. The first time we haven't had a guest on the wheel segment in a couple of weeks.
It's weird not having a guest because we got so used to it. But I will say the majority of the podcasts that are on the wheel have a guest.
Okay. All right. So you ready to spin the wheel? Episode number 30. Can you believe it? Can you believe we are 30 episodes
in? They said
in?
We'd never get there. Yeah. 30 and we're just getting started here.
Okay.
Can you imagine if this was the 30th episode of watching that same episode?
We would have been done. That would have been it. We would have just said, shut it down.
Honestly, how many episodes do you think we could have gotten?
I tried to watch it twice and I think after the second time, like there is nothing there.
It's not bad enough that it's funny.
Yeah.
But it's like, I guess would there have been like little things that we would have picked up?
Yeah,
CSI New York also does this very, like the sort of interstitials like between scenes are very annoying.
Mm-hmm. I think we would have picked up on different things like on the train party, different things that were like, hey, did you see what was in the garbage disposal? Did you see what was going on like in the forensic lab?
Certain things were not made to be analyzed. It's like a night. It's like you shouldn't do a podcast about like every episode of like Late Night with Jimmy Fallon. They weren't made to really be held up to scrutiny.
They don't hold up. Okay. All right. Here we go. Here is the wheel. Episode number 30 of RANAP. What will it be? Here we go. Round and round. And it is coming up. It is not season 3, episode 7. We have a little bit of a photo finish here. We need to zoom in. And it is Rob and Akiva need a life coach.
Ooh.
That is with Caitlin Herman. That could be a bit of a scheduling tricky
disaster
thing.
Yes.
So next step is should I text Caitlin Herman now and see if she could do the Life Coach podcast this week?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think you should.
Okay, let's see if we can, do we have anything that we could banter about while I'm waiting to hear back from her?
Yeah, we'll figure something out.
Okay. All right.
Mets are about to be 2-0.
Okay. So kudos there to the Mets. Okay. All right. So let me text Caitlin Herman. Hey, are you available to do the Life Advice podcast sometime in the next week? Okay, let's see. All right, and hopefully we get an answer to...
What happens if she's not? Do we wait another week, or do we scrap her, or I don't know what happens.
So...
Never happened before.
I don't know. If she's not available, let's see if she either is not available. I'd love to just stay on until we can get an answer on this, but if she says that she's not available, then I think we have to spin again, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and she just gets another chance if it comes up next time.
Yes, or she's like, I can do it next week. I guess we can then spin the wheel and then not have a wheel spin next time.
Well, I don't like that idea.
Okay, well, what I mean, we have these things with guests that are dependent. Then we shouldn't have things on the wheel.
Guests should be at the whim of our needs.
They should be, but I mean,
Rob, like, this is a great honor. And
what if,
like,
she's like, hey, I'm out of town for a week.
I mean, do they have the internet where she is? Like, is she in?
I guess
is
so.
She in like a remote island with no internet?
You wouldn't want her in person.
Oh, I mean, I do want her. Well, I'm not in my person. I mean, she's welcome to come here, but I feel like your person.
Yeah,
I don't. Was that the plan?
Yeah, that's the plan, to have her here in person.
What if she doesn't answer for 4 hours? Are we just going to keep this going? Can we commit to just keep?
We'll give it five minutes.
5 minutes. That's what she's got.
Okay, 5 minutes, and then we'll
should
see.
Should we just record two different ends to the podcast, like a choose your own adventure, like one where she says yes, and the next one where we just do a double, like a spin.
Okay,
you know what I mean.
Well, all right. Well, let's then. So you want to record an alternate ending where she says she can't do it. Okay, so this will be the ending of that she can't do it, and then we'll talk that through. Okay, like, all right, Akiva, bad news. Looks like Caitlin is not available to do the podcast with us. Where do we go from here?
I think we got to respin that wheel.
Respin the wheel. And so, sadly, we did not get Caitlin Herman. So, this is what we're going to do instead?
Correct.
Okay. All right. Here we go. Wheel is spinning.
What if it's Caitlin Herman again? Then this, like, fate really wants us to have her.
Season 3, episode 7.
Yeah. Well, that's not a big shock.
Okay. So are you ready to go to the fishbowl?
I guess we do need to go to the fishbowl. Yes.
Okay.
Well, now, how about this? Is Golden Girls, does the fishbowl have a 1 week gestation period like the wheel does?
I say no, but yeah. I think the odds are against it. So
yeah, the odds are about 1 in 21. If I know how many balls are in the fishbowl.
All right.
I haven't heard that sound in like 10 weeks.
Reaching in. With my eyes closed.
Will people ever hear this if Caitlin Herman just texts back and says, I'm in?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. All right. So here we go, Kiva. This is in my hand. I have SNL. SNL, wow. Season 3, episode 7.
Almost got kicked out of the fishbowl. Was not kicked out of the fishbowl.
It was not.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. So we are going to talk about...
Is that just the two of us?
Yeah, I don't think we have a guest.
Okay.
That's fine.
What about Lauren? Do you think we get Lauren?
Lauren Michaels?
Yeah, well, I just want people to drink.
Or Lauren from Survivor.
No, Lauren with N-E, okay. The Canadian guy.
Yeah.
The guy who's friends with Martin Short.
Yeah.
Lauren Michaels really thinks, I'm 99% sure that the show has to end when he's done. You know what I mean?
You think so?
Like, I think in his mind that the show cannot continue without him, even though I'm sure NBC is going to fight tooth and nail for that. That's my impression.
I don't think I've ever heard that.
No, this is just my take.
Yeah, and I think it's a cold take.
No, I'm pretty sure that he has said things like, I, listen, we need to get Lauren on the blower and talk to him about this.
Yeah. We'll ask him when he's on the podcast on next week. Sure. Who was the host of SNL season 3, episode 7?
I think it was like someone we'd never heard of or something. It was some ridiculous person.
It wasn't Candace Bergen?
No, it was neither the actress Candace Bergen nor the racist politician.
Okay, so SNL season 3 episode 7. Yes. Oh, it was Mary Kay Place with musical guest Willie Nelson.
Okay, Willie Nelson, we could deal with.
So, real,
but we have to watch a whole freaking episode.
Real bummer. Caitlin Herman was not available to.
I tried to kick the SNL out of the fishbowl, but the listeners knew better than me. Yeah. This is what they wrought.
Look, I think we'll have fun. I think we'll have fun.
It'll be good. It'll be good. Bad is good and good is good, but mediocre. Yes. Hopefully is also good.
Is this available on Hulu? Where are we watching these?
I feel like SNL, it bounces around every year. It was on...
hopefully not the same site we watched CSI New York.
No. SNL is actually on one of the streaming sites. It's just bounced around a lot because it was like Yahoo had its own thing, but then like that went bust, okay. I think.
And if Caitlin is available, then this is back in the fishbowl, or are we burning this?
No, this is, I'd like to burn it, but it doesn't get burned because of this.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Okay.
We can next week say, hey, we were not excited for that. Let's boot it. But it shouldn't get punished. Like, it's already punished enough that it doesn't happen.
Okay.
I've never wanted Caitlin Herman to respond to you more than I do right now, though.
Okay. All right. So let's record the ending where that Caitlin has responded that she is going to be on the podcast.
But can we also keep this in? Like, is this whole thing in?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Okay, fine. Okay. We don't have to edit.
Okay. All right, Akiva. Next week, Caitlin Herman will discuss questions. Now, we need people to send us their questions, their life advice questions. So this is going to be one that this could be a quick podcast or a long one.
Yeah, we need. So, yeah, put at RAANAP at NeedaWeb at robisawebsite.com.
That's right.
Or NeedaPodcast at robisawebsite.com.
Or Seinfeld at postshowrecaps.com.
Seinfeld, yes, if you're still an old school,
yes.
And you like the original
knowledge. Your life question, but, let's try to keep it to like a paragraph.
Mm-hmm.
Because
unless it's really interesting,
yeah.
Unless it's like the most interesting.
Yeah, unless I know everybody feels like their life is the most interesting thing, but really, when you're doing these dating advice shows or anything, like a paragraph is really a lot. Like 500 words is like, wait, who is this again? What is going on? So paragraph, try to be succinct and keep it short.
Your wife already not a huge fan of this show.
Of Robin Kivanita podcast, right? She is one of her least favorite shows in all of.
Not a big fan.
Probably this could. I think this is her least favorite of all the podcasts.
What a freaking hater! She's in the silent majority.
Yes, I can't even mention Robin Kivanita podcast without like an eye roll from hell.
Mm-hmm. And it's not because we're putting her kids through college. Of course, she doesn't care about that. Mm-hmm. But now having,
I think that she looks at this podcast as like, okay, I understand the function of the Survivor coverage. Mm-hmm. This is, you're just messing around with Akiva. This is not a integral part of the Rob as a podcast experience.
What about News AF?
That one doesn't.
Kicking News AF's butt.
News AF is shorter. And I think she likes Tyson more than you.
Yeah, fair.
And fair. So that, it doesn't really like impact her that much.
I mean, my wife hates it also. So
we
record this
a lot on the weekends. She has to hear more about this. Like nobody's ever like, hey, Nicole, did you hear what happened on News AF?
No. Yeah. Listen, we make headlines, though. That's what we do.
Right.
Rob.
Yeah.
So I think she's going to be extra mad because I think Caitlin coming to the studio for a Robin Akivanita podcast, she's just not going to like that.
No, it'll be fine. That Nicole sees Caitlin routinely. That Caitlin works out at a she goes to the gym next to where my wife goes to go boxing.
Mm.
Right.
She's learning. Wow. Yes. Your wife's going to beat you up. I think she's training to punch you.
She could try. I think I'm still faster than her.
Yeah, I would guess you're faster.
Yeah,
but
like
man,
I have just much longer limbs than she does. Like,
fair.
I'm not afraid of her.
How about we read some podcast reviews while we're still waiting fruitlessly for Caitlin to respond to your text?
Okay. All right. So let's go ahead and let's look this up to see if anybody gave us any reviews in the Apple Podcast Store. You can go to robhasawebsite.com/NAP to go ahead and go directly to our page in the Apple Podcast Store. And we're going to go ahead and bring up Robin Akiva Need a Podcast with 174 ratings in the iTunes Apple Podcast Store. Okay. Oh, here's a one of our most recent ones. And this comes to us from a listener. It looks like we got a lot of feedback from the TV theme song bracket from people.
Mm-hmm.
This is from Karen by the Bay. Says, "Kiss My Grits. The theme song to Alice was snubbed. Used to be sad, used to be shy. Don't all the rest of the words come from there, even if you can barely remember
the show?" I
don't
even know the name of the show. I don't even know what she's talking about. Okay. I don't even know what show she's talking about.
All right.
This is what we had to deal with this week, Rob.
All right.
People saying, "How was my show snubbed?" And we've never even heard of the show that they're talking about.
All right. Then here comes somebody named Pure Coin. Pure Coin says, "A warning to those yet to listen. First off, I'm not an iTunes user, and setting up their service is a frustrating ordeal, but it was vital that I leave this review. It literally took me an hour to get to this point, and I only tell you this so you can appreciate the severity of what follows. Avoid this podcast at all costs. Rob Cesternino of The Scorned fame and his young ward, Akiva Winokur, are on a mission to create the longest podcast possible. It started out innocently enough with a couple of music videos and enjoying the company of perfect strangers, and has since devolved into a nonstop barrage of musical interludes, sleeping listener updates, and sometimes they even forget that they have a show and just banter for the whole episode. They don't even speak English anymore. It's all yeets and ops. I fear in the not too distant future, episodes won't be measured in hours, but in days. There is one saving grace. At the start of every episode, Rob explains the entire podcast down to the small detail so newcomers won't be lost. So heed this warning and don't fall into the trap that myself and almost a dozen listeners before me have. The trap that is Robin and Keeping Need a Podcast."
Love it.
Okay. We
but that was 5 stars.
That was five stars, yes.
Okay, yeah.
Then also a couple other quick ones. This is one: "Enraged, Incensed, Angered, and Infuriated" is the headline here by Invisible mm-hmm. Terror. "There are some of the emotions that I went through listening to the latest podcast. Robin Akiva ranked TV theme songs created by a list from the Cheetos mascot." I guess that's Chester.
The shot at Chester, yeah.
"Their criteria for which songs made it through was inconsistent and seemed to hinge on whether Akiva got a burst of energy or was falling asleep. I think that he had a stroke in the middle hours of the podcast where he was making a wheezing noise for a while. This mm-hmm. was by far and away the best episode so far, so I would give it a go."
Can I say, by the way, I made a prediction after last week's episode?
Yes.
I thought that someone would write in and say they got into a car accident during the Different Strokes bit.
Because
we have gotten those emails before, right? Like, "I almost got into a car accident. I got hit by a car." I thought, like, because I listened back to it. I know I never listened to my podcast just to hear what it sounded like. And my laughter was so infectious, it made me laugh again.
Yes. I have never heard you make a noise like that.
Well, it was 5 in the morning. I was delirious.
I was like, what's happening to Akiva?
Like, I made the joke. I think it was funny, but it might not have been like the funniest thing that's ever been uttered. But at 5 in the morning, when I hadn't slept in like 2 days, I was delirious.
Yeah.
I couldn't stop laughing. But I think it's going to be tough to beat that, to make the best of for the RANAP for next year.
Okay,
the end of the year.
For when our clip show comes back on the wheel mm-hmm. in a couple of months.
No, not our clip show, the RHAP clip show.
Okay.
It's like our entrant into that. Yeah. It might be tough to beat.
Yeah. The only thing working against it is, I don't know if in general stroke humor is, widely loved.
I didn't get one complaint. We got 100 people saying that was funny.
That's
and no
our
complaints.
Core audience that's listening 3 hours into a podcast. I don't know if the general
also buried
audience,
at the end of the best of that's going in.
Yeah, okay.
We better have some good moments for that.
At the very least, I need to pull your laugh for the soundboard.
Fair.
Okay. All right. So a little bit of a cliffhanger this week.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, maybe you could record the, you know, what the answer is by yourself if she texts back.
All right. We will see. We're going to wrap things up. Next time, it will be Rob and Akiva Need a Podcast, episode number 30. Akiva, what's going on over on the 32 Fans podcast?
Yeah, it was the end of bracket season. Chester and I
you guys had a crazy March. One.
Yeah, it was crazy. We finished March by ranking... by doing a bracket of our 32 favorite listeners, and we picked a favorite listener.
Okay.
I regret our winner. I regret picking that person to win.
Okay, so it is your favorite listener, not the best listener.
Yeah, it's all right. It's how we choose, I guess, is subjective. It's up to each co-host, me and poor Chester. But yeah, we narrowed it down. It was really activity in the Facebook group. Do we know if you listen or not? That was a big one, because if you don't listen, it would be hard to make the 32, but we weren't sure. You know, is there something wacky about you that we can make fun of? Because there's people who listen, but they're kind of like straightforward, and then it's like, all right, we got nothing to say.
Mm-hmm.
Are they like a little goofy? Do we know them? You know, that helped you.
Okay.
You were in the bracket.
I was?
But you don't win.
I'm going to listen to this one.
Yeah, you were in that one, but you know, you don't listen to the non-football stuff a lot of times, so you didn't advance too far.
I mean, if the podcast was every week Akiva and Chester fight, then I would never miss an episode.
Yeah, you want more fighting. You want more fighting.
Yeah,
Chester and I are like, we're a weird couple where we go through, like, there'll be like 6 weeks in a row where like we're ending the podcast and we're like getting divorced. I'm never going to speak to him again. But then we'll go like a year where... you know, we're like fine and we're sort of on good terms.
Yeah. It's like right now we're in a good spot right now.
Probably won't last too much longer, but it's not, I guess it's more fun to hear us fight.
Okay. All right. We will see what happens next week. If we don't have an update in the podcast, watch for Twitter for the update on what's happening next time. A true cliffhanger, Keith.
Yeah. We don't know the answer. And what if Caitlin Herman says yes, but like, she needs 10 days time or something like
that.
Well,
you and I can talk offline and we'll figure it out.
Okay, fine.
Okay, so you think that if she needs more time, let's not race in with another episode and then just to...
Well, if she needs 2 weeks, we could do the other episode and then...
That's fine. We have a contingency. Okay. All right, everybody, thanks for listening. You guys are the best. Hope you enjoyed our solving a murders here today. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye. And we're back. All right. Akiva, time check on your end.
4:31 a.m.
All right. Got any different strokes jokes?
No, but we messed up. We really screwed this one up.
Okay. So it's about 4 hours after we finished recording the podcast. Hope you enjoyed it. It's about ready to go up. And then we have some updates. Caitlin Herman wrote back to me. She says she is not available for 2 weeks to do the podcast. I texted back, okay, well, let me know a date when you can do it. She has not yet responded to
maybe she's out. Maybe we have to take her off the wheel.
It might have to come off the wheel. And okay. Maybe she's cooled on her enthusiasm for being...
Maybe she listened to like the theme song episode and she's out on both of us.
Perhaps. And then Akiva made a shocking discovery on his end. I was in bed, Rob.
I was going to sleep. And I said, you know, I wasn't super psyched about the SNL episode. I wonder why, when we did the poll like a month or two ago, why SNL wasn't picked, why I didn't pick SNL if I wasn't really psyched about having a 1975 episode of SNL in the fishbowl. And
yes.
So I was like, what did I pick? And I scrolled through my Twitter and I found four options for me to send out of the fishbowl. I think it was Sliders, Muppet Show, SNL, and Carmen Sandiego.
Didn't I literally say, like, I don't know, there's things in the fishbowl that we voted out. And you said, oh, don't worry about it. We got that.
Yes, I said, oh, if it comes up, we'll remember. That's, I think, exactly what I said. Did not remember. Howard voice.
Okay. He did not remember. Okay, so what is the plan now, Akiva?
I think the fishbowl shouldn't be punished for our stupidity. So I think we just pick another show out of the fishbowl, and that's what we talk about next week.
Yeah, well, there was some talk about a third wheel spin, but no, that shouldn't. The fact that we pulled a ball that should not have been in the fishbowl should not negate the fact that season 3, episode 7 came up. That'll also get season 3, episode 7 back down to 2 spots so we can hit some of the things on the wheel that we are trying to get to. So here we go. This is an unprecedented second go-round here for the fishbowl.
Probably a third option of the night.
Third option, but this is the second shot at the fishbowl. Okay. All right. You're going to remember if I pick something here? Okay.
Yes. I'm going to double-check and make sure that it's not something that we booted again.
My eyes are closed. I have a ping pong ball in my hand.
So much integrity.
Okay. All right. Here, you ready to find out what it is?
Yeah, okay. Well, it's going to be better than SNL, so I'm excited.
Okay, here we go.
Okay, that's exciting.
It's exciting. Could be a little sad with the whole Luke Perry thing.
Yeah. Should we spin it a fourth time? No, it's fine. Okay. We'll pay our respects to Luke Perry.
No guess.
And besides, you're happy because it could have been Riverdale with Luke Perry, so you'd much rather see Luke Perry here.
Yes, but we would have a great guest if it was Riverdale.
Yeah, Frail Mary.
Okay. So, Beverly Hills 90210, no guest. What is your background on Beverly Hills 90210?
Never seen it.
You've never seen it. Oh.
No, I mean, maybe I saw like a minute of it, but no, I wasn't. It was like one of those shows you weren't allowed to watch because, okay, again, I'm a couple years younger than you, so it was like, it was a little too hot for television when I was a kid.
Are we in the market for a 90210 expert?
I mean, if Matthew Berry wants to come on, he could do it. He's like, Bill Simmons. They did a 4-hour 90210 podcast.
Yeah, I remember. Very long time ago. September 2nd, 2010.
Yeah, Simmons said, I think, for many years it was his most popular. I think until he had Obama, it was his most popular podcast he ever did.
Okay. All right. If we could get Obama, should we have him?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think Obama was a big 90210 guy. Did you watch the show? Like, can you? It's like if one of us hasn't seen it, one of us had, then it's fun because you could sort of lead me through the series. Because I know nothing.
I have seen it. I have not watched it in many, many years. That's would not fine. I am a super expert on 90210.
Yeah, but my question is going to be like, who's that guy? How do they, easy questions that you can answer. I think
we're in the market for, if somebody can tell us why they should be the 90210 guest, not just somebody who like looky-loo that just, it's my turn to be on the podcast.
Preferably somebody with podcast experience, though. Yes. But I'm much more excited about this than I was about SNL.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So all's well that ends well. We solved two murders. We went through three
ideas. There could
be
a third murder because you had to tell your wife downstairs that you had to go back upstairs and record more.
Her entire family is visiting right now. It's like,
do you want to do another podcast now?
Well, I'm ready.
Should we just do 90210? Should we watch it and like pause it after every commercial? We've done that before.
I'm ready to watch the same one again. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Great job, Akiva. Great catch. Could you imagine the social media uproar? Probably we're probably getting ripped apart on Twitter from people who have realized that the SNL ping pong ball should not have been in there and are screaming their heads off right now.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people who probably know more about the inner workings of the podcast than we do. We're like, we have a lot of rules. We built this very complicated universe, and sometimes it's hard to follow all the rules.
Okay. All right. Akiva, you go to bed. All right. You're still done earlier than last time.
That's true. I'm not delirious. Like, there's no, maybe I am a little delirious.
Yeah.
But whatever. I'll be okay.
Okay. All right.
If my wife catches me doing this podcast at 4:37 a.m., then woe is me. God help me.
Okay. All right, Akiva. So great job. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Take care. Bye.